kind of planning, monitoring, and evaluation. Let me greet also the delegation from the Parliamentary Budget Office, our support staff, good morning to all of you, and our guests at the back, good morning to you. You're welcome to this meeting. Two apologies from Honorable Eunice Nyalungu and from Honorable Shejima. And Honorable Madlopa is coming in late. Yes, those are the apologies I've received so far. The DPME is giving us a presentation or a briefing on the progress that that has been made in the implementation of the medium-term strategic framework in relation as well to the NDP goals. So that's what we're going to receive this morning. And once we have done so, we will then, as members, have the opportunity to engage in the deliberations so that by the time we finish, we as honorable members will be better informed about this very important area of work. Because these are two very key influence of government which must tell us, which must tell Parliament and our people whether we are making progress in changing the lives of all of our people for the better. As we say, that government seeks to work toward a better life for all. And if we say that these are two instruments of government that would assist us to achieve the various goals that are set out in strategy, in the medium-term strategic framework and in the National Development Plan, this Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation is better placed to update us as Parliament and inform our people on the extent to which we are moving towards the 2030 milestone. Let me therefore hand over to the officials of the DPME to do the presentation. But before that, I see a hand from Honorable Fick, Malcolm Fick.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not wanting to do your work because I'm sure you're controlling things, but I'm just sort of concerned. We've got a 52-page presentation, and this. It's quite a bit of information, and it's very important information. And in order for us to be effective, the presenters will go through slowly so that they absorb the information. And I want to thank them at this point in time for sending it well in advance, so we were able to, I was able to look at the presentation. But that's just my concern, is that whether we're going to be able to go through the presentation, deliberate, and whether they're going to respond in the 3 hours that they have allocated to the agency.
Yes, indeed it is quite a voluminous presentation. Let's take a bite at it and see how far we go in the next 2.5 to 3 hours. If we if we feel that we have not exhausted all the information through the deliberation, we will ask them to respond in writing to those areas which we will not have been able to cover by the time we finish. We hope to finish by about 1 o'clock so that we give members time to have lunch ahead of the extended public committee, which are beginning at 2. At most, we might go up to about 1:15. So let's have a bite at this information and see how far we get. Thank you very much. Go ahead, continue. And we'll be pleased if you introduced yourselves. As you would have heard, I called by name Honorable Malcolm Fick from the DA, because I want you to remember his name when he asks you questions. Next to him is seated Honorable Alan McLaughlin. And this corner here is Honorable Sheila Shopperstone. And down here is Honorable Doris Sinokwanyana. Next to her is Honorable Sibongile Manana. And next to Honorable Manana is Honorable Nahasha Lowe. I'll let you know as the members who have apologized come in, those who will be coming in, who have indicated they will be coming in later. Andava Twabaza. Yes. So, over to yourself.
Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, good morning. My name is Thulani Masilela from the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. I'm responsible for 3 things. One is outcome 2, which is health. The second one is Operation Pakisa. And I'm there the acting DDG for the OAE branch in the DDME. With me are 2 colleagues, Dr. Thabo Mabopane and Mr. Rudy Dick. And with the chairperson's permission, can they introduce themselves to the committee?
Good morning. I'm responsible for outcome 1 and outcome 5, which is basic education and skills.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. I'm responsible for outcome 4, which is the economy. Also outcome 6, which is the infrastructure. I'm also responsible for 2 other areas of units in falling under outcome 4, which is the socioeconomic impact assessment that's just recently been introduced as part of the cabinet process on doing impact assessments on regulations, policies, and legislation. I'm also responsible for coordinating the district mining community as part of the presidential package from 2012.
Chairperson, thank you very much. First of all, we wish to convey apologies from our Honourable Minister, Mr. Jeff Hattel, who's here at his party pitch this afternoon. So that's what he's attending to this morning, and it's been supported by our DG, Mr. Matuna. They would have liked to be here. They did not miss this commitment to the party speech. We also wish to apologize, Chair, for bringing an all-maid delegation. We'll return to address the committee. So we followed the correspondence that we received from the committee in the instructor.
Oh, sorry, Chair, to interrupt the presenter. Chair, according to the committee rules, is the DG not supposed to have sent his apology in writing to the committee according to committee rules? Can I just have clarity on that aspect? Thank you.
Yes, normally you would expect written apology, but of course, for now, I would ask members to accept the verbal apology. in future, we, because look, these are high-ranking officials who are heads of departments. I'm not only referring to your DG, I'm referring to all DGs in State Department, including those who are heading entities, department entities. We would expect them to give their apologies in writing. But as I say, let's just accept this one. And in fact, it says in committee that we shall not always accept apologies from accounting officers of departments. Only on exceptional circumstances where we will then be able to say we accept this apology. Because remember, there are accounting officers who are dealing with policy implementation on day-to-day basis, and they are tasked to account to Parliament. So let's just get that clear, so that even our secretariat, when we write to the department, they emphasize that we need the head of department and other accounting officers in that meeting. In fact, indeed, we would appreciate the presence of ministers as well, but we do understand that ministers have various engagements at different times. But when it is possible for them to attend, we would appreciate that as well. Honorable Professor.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm glad you raised the issue of the accounting officer. You know, when departments make presentations on performance of the department, according to the Public Finance Management Act, the person who is held to account is the accounting officer. And I really take exception if the accounting officer is not present when these presentations are made. Although today we are going to accept the situation of the budget. But please, in the future, let us stick by the rules. The PFMA insists that the accounting officer is the person to account. Any other person in the department is support staff to the accounting officer. So we'll accept it for today. But we need accounting officers to really respect the Public Finance Management Act. Thank you.
Honorable, and you will take notes because I called all members by name. She just arrived and you have heard that she indicated. So this is Honorable Eliwe Madloba. We have two doctors in this committee. This is Dr. Telu Madoba and then Dr. Fick at the back. Malcolm Fick.
Okay.
Yes.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I think the sentiments that you are raising on behalf of all of us, that in future we are not going to accept the apology for the accounting office. My complaint, Honorable Chair, is the fact that we wrote and requested them to come and do the presentation to us. They accepted the request. They never indicated that there will be a problem for the accounting officer to be part of this meeting, because we are having a concern, in particular with this particular department. We are having a serious concern. So if the accounting officer is not here, really, as members, we are having a great concern, that you think it will never happen again. Because when you accept the invitation, you accept the invitation because you'll be part of the presentation. When they were accepting the invitation, they were supposed to indicate, to say that, no, they are having the challenges, but because this presentation is urgent, they will send the invitation without the accounting officer. really it's something that is unacceptable. I'd take your plea, Honorable Chair, to say that okay, let us continue, but the future really we don't accept this apology in the meeting when they have accepted our request. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Members. I do want to say that this is, you know, when members say that they want the CG here, it is not indication that we undermine your capacity to deal with the job that you are delegated to. We trust, we believe in your capacity. The point, although members are making, is that the buck stops with somebody. That's the point. Thank you. Go ahead.
Chairman, thank you very much, and we have noted all the concerns raised by the members, and we convey them to the accounting officer. Our apologies once more. We will convey the message. We still know that in structuring the presentation, we followed the correspondence that the department received from the committee, that the committee wanted us to talk about one alignment between the budget and the NDP, how planning processes are being strengthened across government, but most importantly, monitoring the implementation of the NDP through the medium-term strategy framework for the first 5-year cycle, which is 2014 to 2019. That is how we went about in structuring this and the other information that the chair indicated, we will also be able to provide it. This is the slide that we do not wish to spend a lot of time on. It is a slide that honorable members are fully aware of. It just reflects the three goals of the MDP, leading to the triple challenges of poverty, unemployment, and inequality. In the next slide, we just show the 14 outcomes, which are in the medium-term strategic framework, outcomes which are linked to the 15 chapters of the NDP. And when we get to the section that deals with progress on the MTSF, we present that progress in accordance to the 14 outcomes. On slide number 6, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we have had previous engagements with this Honorable Committee, SCOA, as well as the Parliamentary Budget Office. And we are reflecting some of the feedback and guidance we have received from the two committees, from the committee and the office. One indication that to ensure focused implementation and results, government plans have to be aligned. One, MDP MTSF to department APPs, as well as strategic plans. We call this a cascade of planning from the apex of plans to the NDP, to the lowest implementation plans being the APPs. And that these plans have to be reflected in the way government resources and budgets are allocated. So to assess alignment, what we are looking for is that our plans need to be very clear in terms of targets and activities, and that we need to know what we are spending on. And the first feedback we need to convey to the committee this morning is that in both areas, the perspective of the GPNE is that we are making progress, but that progress is ongoing. It's progress in the refinement of plans and interrogation of alignment, as we'll show later, improvement of the quality of information, as well as the transparency of budgets. This slide is just a graphic representation of the 14 outcomes and how they link to the chapters of the MTSF. Chair, in the process of aligning the NDP to the MTSF to govern plan, our first observation is that it has been a complex exercise because of the size and complexity of government business. We followed a very extensive process in asking the MTSF from the NDP and agreeing what is achievable in the first 5 years of NDP, which is the 2014-2019. What is achievable in the other 5 years period and the first 5 years period leading us to 2030. What we also found was that there were certain areas where NDP provided only a broad framework which needed to be elaborated on. Secondly, some of the programs of government felt that it needed some time to be fine-tuned. There are ongoing efforts to fine-tune the MTSF with submission to cabinet to revise chapters of the MTSF, but our observation against that a large measure of alignment exists. What we've also observed is that much as we need improvement of the alignment between planning and budgeting, there is no evidence that important MTSF priorities remain unfunded. Though in some key areas, such as tertiary education, it became very evident that the fiscal environment had not allowed for the rapid increase of expenditure in line with targets. And when we get to outcome 5, we will say more about this. As the funding for higher education in the country has not been sufficient. We will elaborate on that later. Again, on the issue of alignment, what we've noticed is that broad priority areas are covered through substantial allocation and also through continual revisiting or revision of allocation among sub-sectors of government. The DPME, together with the tech units of Treasury, have conducted evaluations and also assessed implementation and impact in more detail with a view of improving the alignment between budget and the NDP. There is commitment from both departments to work further to strengthen the prioritization process as a key link between planning and budgeting and strengthening the political oversight over the budget. Right? It is not led by technical people, but it's led by political leadership based on the priorities of the country. The strategy to catalyze this in terms of four areas. One, in this financial year in which we are, which is 2016, our focus was to increase the budget to focus on job creation, strengthening the economy, and resolving the post-school or social education issues. To continue to interrogate the fiscal framework to go forward, and also to continue to strengthen our outcomes framework, and to take impact into account when we do allocation. Chair, the last slide on this matter looks at the mechanism that we have developed in terms of alignment going forward. And maybe I can just mention the first 3 bullet points, the rest would have also been covered. That we need to ensure that funds flow to the right sectors, that funds are used efficiently, and that spending is sustainable, and that the stability for planning. Honorable Chair and members, before I move away from the second, can I also make an announcement that this Friday, the 22nd of April, the National Planning Commission will be releasing a report on its work and conducting a media briefing. We will delve more into some of the details of the work they have done and how they have advised government in terms of alignment between NDP, SGSF, and the budget. It is the level of detail that it was felt that maybe for this presentation, once the highlight was just done, but the exact details will be announced at the forum. We also wish to provide an update to the Honourable Committee about the support that the department has been providing to government to enhance planning. We've looked at the third draft and the second draft of the annual performance plan and revised strategic plan of the National Department to ensure that they are aligned to the targets and actions in the MTSF. This was done by ourselves together with the Department of Women, who felt strongly that the gender dimension needs to be embedded in the plan of government. So the reports are available. We've shared them with the department, and of the 43 national departments, we could identify full and firm alignment in 30 departments, of which departments 11 demonstrated full alignment, while about 19 demonstrated partial alignment. And we raised our correspondence to them concerned about this partial alignment. Partly, this was due to the MTF refinement processes that were ongoing at the time the plans that were developed. But partly, there was something that we called paying lip service to the NDP and the MTF. In the first part of the plan, reference will be made to these high-level plans, NDP and MTF, and how the work of the department links up with the high-level plans. But when you read the rest of the document, it's still business as usual. You know, the first part just makes reference, but the alignment is not full. So we then agreed with the department to work with them to provide ongoing support to ensure full alignment. Some of the issues that we picked up in the assessment, other than the issue of the alignment, was the non-inclusion of some key policies and strategies from the MDSF in the APP. The issue of crafting of smart objectives is a technical issue, but we also picked up the issue of the need to link the annual plans to the 5-year plans called the strategic plans, and again the issue of definition of objectives and indicators. These are just technical issues which we raise with the department, which also the Auditor General will want them to improve on. We also looked at provincial plans, and we found alignment well to the MTSF, and we also provided them with an assessment report and engaged with them as well. For departments that have concurrent functions, we've agreed with them about core sets of standardized indicators, a set of indicators that can be used to monitor the entire sector based on a common set of indicators. So when we looked at their second draft of annual performance plans, we noticed that there is generally alignment to the standardized set of indicators which was agreed on, which enabled us to do monitoring across the entire sector. As we move away from this section, Chair, the message we wish to convey to the Honourable Committee is that we believe that the Department or Government broadly is making strides towards institutionalizing planning. Support is being provided national and provincial government departments. As I indicated, the NPC continues to play a critical and strategic role in reshaping planning and budgeting processes, and they will elaborate on this at their media briefing. But clearly, a key objective is for us to achieve this alignment between the 2030 plan and the 5-year plan. We do notice that key tasks remain of enhancing planning, budgeting, and monitoring, as well as capacity and accountability across the spheres of government. So if we move to the third, maybe probably the last section of the presentation, it's where we're going to spend a bit of time reporting back to the committee on the work that we are doing in monitoring the implementation of NDP and the MTSF. On this slide, the first issue we wish to raise is that the executive being cabinet also monitors the implementation of the MTSF through quarterly program of action or QA reports. These reports are first tabled before a technical implementation forum which consists of director general of a particular sector and the HODs. From there, they go to an implementation forum which is chaired by a coordinating minister and where other ministers participate who have contributions made to that outcome. The latest report we have are for quarter 3 of 2015-16, which were reported on to cabinet in March 2016. And this is because quarter 4 is at the end of March. So a good trend that we observed is that for each quarter under review, we had progress report for all 14 outcomes, which was 100% submission rate, and 100% submission of personal room from ourselves. These reports were discussed by 5 cabinet committees, GNA, SCHD, the ESET, JTPS, and the 8 cabinet committees chaired by the Deputy President. So what we'll be sharing with the committee today has been discussed by the executive. We are presenting a summary, but the final report has been shared. This slide just reflects graphically our observation of progress with each of the 14 outcomes. If honorable members look at each of the bars, they will see that the bigger length of the bar is a color of green and or yellow. Green meaning target has been achieved or exceeded, likely to be achieved. Yellow meaning substantial progress is made towards target set. Red meaning substantial progress and the blue indicating no data. The blue color has since been discontinued. Cabinet said they don't want to see a report with the blue color. There must be data. You can't report that you don't have data for the same indicator. So in our next presentation, you will not see a blue color anymore. Basically, the areas that are red, marked in red, or the outcomes that are marked in red, reflect lack of progress towards the targets that we have been set. As I'm saying, if you look at the size of the bar, you'll see that most of it, or a bigger proportion, is amber or green. We have done a synopsis of two slides, the outcome. Normally, the progress reports we receive from coordinating departments will be like between 30 and 40 pages long. Our briefing notes will be about 4 pages long. But what we have done here is to try to summarize a 80-page report into two slides, or a 40-page report into two slides. But then what we are saying is that there is a far more detailed report. We have listed up what we believe are the key issues. Outcome one, which is quite basic in patients. DPME's observation is that 9% of annual targets were met and about 1.4 are likely to be met. Areas of progress include the placement of Fundalu Shaka teachers who receive salaries from government in post, and the target has been exceeded by more than 1,200 graduates. We are observing that learner access to broadband is proceeding well. About 80% of the targeted learners have access to broadband. Our observation from the report is that provincial expenditure on the infrastructure grants in education is progressing well, except in the Eastern Cape. Expenditure is the lowest at 86%. Good progress has been made towards the completion of schools that were built to replace inappropriate schools. However, there will also be key challenges. One, the slow progress in effective rating of teacher absenteeism. Secondly, the infancy between government and staffing, which prevents an agreement on principles and performance agreement. Also, during the reporting period, the issue of annual national assessment remains unresolved, and this led to 80% of schools not doing honors. There has been also a system to measure school readiness for grade 1 entrance. The last point on this slide says, although good progress is being made for the completion of schools, there are still 37 more schools that need to be completed to reach the 2015 season target. In a correspondence received from the Honorable Committee, we were asked to indicate what needs to be done, what are the key strategic areas of intervention, and for each of the 14 outcomes, we have done so. With respect to quality-based education, our first proposal is that the empathy between the department and the union needs to be resolved around the performance agreement for school principals, as well as around the administration of ANA, and that we do need an efficient and effective system to correct teacher absenteeism, among others. And we also say that the intensive process needs to be supported to correct its infrastructure explanation that should be the backlog. Now that honorable members have had copies, I will not read bullet by bullet, but I'll just highlight key issues. We then move to outcome two, which is the long and healthy life for all. There are several areas of progress, which include improvements in our key health indicators such as life expectancy, the reduction in infant mortality rate, the child mortality, and the reduction in the maternal mortality ratio. It is important to note that South Africa has achieved the second fastest decline in infant mortality in sub-Saharan Africa, second after Rwanda. The white paper of NHI has been released. Testing for HIV reflects good progress, with 3.1 million people tested, which exceeded its quarterly target. Putting also that people have been initiated on ART are remaining on treatment, which is a figure of 3.3 million. There's also good progress being made with the management of TB. Under challenges, our concern is that this improvement in the life and in the health of South Africans are not evenly distributed across the country. A case in point is this maternal mortality ratio. Nationally, it has improved very well from 102 per 100,000 And when you phrase it like this, what we mean is 302 deaths per 100,000 life vests. It has decreased by half to 155 between 2009 and 2013. However, the gains that we are talking about are not evenly distributed. If you look at the Eastern Cape, 874, Free State is 194, Gauteng 139, Limpopo 153, and Northwest at 180. They are all higher than the national average of 140.9. Another area of concern is the quality of care in the public sector, which the Office of Health Standards Compliance has been monitoring and producing reports. We have also been involved in that process as well. And then there's the issue of the paradigm shift in nurse training from academic training to nurse-based training. Again, as requested by the Honorable Committee, we have indicated what we believe needs to be done. This was also included in our report to the executive, and we've also added the feedback received from the executive. Among key issues are DHS and DOH to resolve the issue around nursing, and the expansion of the implementation forum for outcome two to include other ministries. There's an issue which also requires the Department of Trade and Industry, and that issue is around the cost of TB drugs, multi-drug-resistant TB drugs, which are exorbitant, and in negotiating this practice, health has indicated the need involvement of ETS. We move to the third outcome, which is about ensuring that all the people in South Africa feel safe and are actually safe. In terms of progress, yes, we're saying some progress has been made. However, an admission also has been made that levels of crime remain unacceptably high in South Africa. The conviction of people for corruption or offences relating to corruption has improved in cases where the amount involved is more than 5 million rand. During the reporting period, the total of 29% were convicted and the highest were killed. We have observed from the report progress towards capacitating the public order policing unit as well as towards the implementation of the National Drug Master Plan. Among these challenges, DPME has raised the issue of the release of crime statistics, saying that it is difficult to effectively monitor progress because the steps are not released to the frequency that would have been more useful. Customer satisfaction surveys have also not been implemented, and the issue of crime detection is just under the target. In terms of what needs to be done, the proposal that attacks needs to incorporate other government departments in combating the problems of drug and substance abuse, accelerate the establishment of community safety forums, accelerate the pace of reduction of backlog cases, provision of quarterly data, assisting government, and not broadly for the concerns that the staff has raised. The fourth outcome, which I've presented to honorable members, is one that Mr. Dix introduced himself. Indicated that he's monitoring, amongst other things, our progress towards decent employment through inclusive economic growth. Data indicates that in quarter 3, our GDP grew by 0.7% compared to the decline of 1.3% in the second quarter of 2015 under the error progress. Sectors that contributed to this progress include manufacturing, which grew by 6.2%, and the services sector. Some progress has been made towards the 50% set aside program. IDC has also played a key role in terms of approving loans to support rural businesses, as well as making resources available for the renewable energy independent cooperative procurement program. Challenges arise. They include weak global commodity prices, the worsening drought situation which impacts on the price of food, resulting in higher inflation of basic foods, issue of unemployment, though it has declined by 1 percentage point, we believe that overall unemployment remains high. 5.4 million people unable to find work. It is a source of concern to government and to the department. Manufacturing has added some jobs, but levels are still below the pre-crisis level. What needs to be done is that we need to maintain a stable macroeconomic and fiscal policy stance to promote low inflation, low interest rates, and a competitive real exchange rate. Will it implement supportive interventions to address constraints in the agricultural sector? Will it provide consistent support to initiatives between business and labor to improve confidence in the South African economy of South African context, including a more sustainable labor relations environment? Outcome 5, a skilled and capable workforce, which is what Dr. Mabohane is responsible for in the DPME. Areas of progress include those 288 lecturers who are undergoing exposure in industry through partnership with the Swiss. Progress also includes the tabling of the higher education amendment bill, which also needs to consolidate various pieces of legislation in Parliament, and expanding community service to graduates, as well as the good news that UWC has received accreditation from the Council of Higher Education to provide technical and vocational education, and we enrolled students in 2016. We believe that this has happened. But again, our target was 3 universities, it was 1 out of 3. Challenges, there's a big one. An honorable members going through their constituencies, we have come across students who say they have completed their achievement training, but they have not received certificates. It's because CETA has a backlog in issuing these certificates. A second constraint is related to funding and infrastructure in terms of achieving enrollment targets, amongst others, the issue of NSFAS. In rand value and in rand terms, NSFAS allocations have increased. But as they increase, the university fees also increase. It's a moving target, which will take down quite some time to achieve. In terms of what needs to be done, we think the Department of Higher Education and Training working with CETA should develop a plan with specific timeframes for addressing the backlog or achieving certificate. We also need to arrest the decline in the production of academics that are found competent after completing training. The quality of training must improve. We also need to work with the private sector to ensure that operational budget for 3 new campuses that have been established is available. Outcome 6 also Mr. Dixie's area, and it deals with creation of an efficient, competitive and supportive economic infrastructure network. Areas of progress include the Single Transport Economic Regulator Bill, seeks to integrate various pieces of legislation that are trying to regulate the transport sector. The progress being made towards the establishment of the Internet Economic Regulator for Water. The good news coming from the commissioning of the UP Unit 6, which minimizes the risk of load shedding, and also the support that is being provided to ESCOM within the 15 billion rand that is provided as part of the support package. Again, as we walk around, we see the progress that is being made towards improving the public transport system. In Cape Town, they have MyCity, which is, by the end of the first quarter, there were 34,000 passengers using it. Rea Vaya in Johannesburg, 33,000 passengers. In Tshwane, we have RBA, which has 3,700 passengers. In George, we have Go George, which has 11,400 passengers. There's also progressive rehabilitation of roads, as well as some progress with the rail and port improvements. We've listed a few things there around improving the economic infrastructure network, including the Maputo rail loop, provision of water, strengthening the water sector, as well as broadband coverage. But there are things that need to be done, and I will keep repeating that for each outcome, the committees ask us to say what needs to be done. So outcome 6, we have the strategic infrastructure projects, which are being monitored separately from our monitoring of the economic infrastructure network. So the first recommendation we made to the executive is that the monitoring of the SIP should be included in the monitoring of economic infrastructure by ourselves, so that when we come to this committee, we can provide a comprehensive feedback about what is being done around infrastructure. The ULF is a surplus of 100 billion, which has increased by 11%. Our recommendation is that we need to look at the UIF and investigate the possibility of using it for job creation programs, among others. It's hitting with the plus, but we have a deficit of jobs on the other hand. We also need a more proactive measure to invest a significant part of the accumulated surplus in these programs that I have already alluded to. Number 7 is about comprehensive rural development, and 81% of the core targets have either been achieved or are likely to be achieved, and they are listed on the left side of the slide. But among key challenges is our concern with the delivery of services in the rural areas, including slow progress with the eradication of the bucket system, limited numbers of informal feeders being supported, like 83 out of the target of 250 is low. The slight increase in rural unemployment is a source of concern. The fact that agriculture has dropped 7,000 jobs is also an issue of concern. What needs to be done? We indicated as well when we reported to the executive that the two departments should consider increasing allocations to augment resources allocated to drought mitigation. And that where there's land adjacent to agricultural colleges and universities, this land should be made available for practical training processes to enhance land utilization and productivity. The rest of our recommendations are reflected on this slide number 87. Slide number 38 deals with outcome A, which is about human settlement. Under areas of good progress, we see progress in the development of the master social plan, which is to be a grand plan for development of human settlements in South Africa. The investment framework, which will unlock investment in the area, as well as the land instrument. We have 62 currency projects reported by the department, which coordinate this function. Projects which seek to overcome apartheid social planning in terms of housing in South Africa and achieve integration. Good progress is also being made with the release of land for the development of human settlement. We believe it will meet the target for communal residential units. However, there are also challenges. These include slow progress with upgrading of informal settlement. It also includes the fact that the mine worker housing strategy has not been consolidated. There are several pieces of work in the department, but what we're looking for is one single integrated strategy. What needs to be done with an intervention strategy to correct the backlog of issuing title deeds, upgrading of informal settlement, and the delivery of social housing. We also need to utilize DFI, Development Finance Institution Consolidation, to develop an affordable housing strategy for negotiation with the banking association. We're going to outcome 9, local government. There's work that the responsible departments are doing in terms of coordinating their functions in alignment with the basic program and provision of basic services. That part is going well, but it's not optimal in other areas. Significant progress has been made in providing households with access to water, but the reliability of infrastructure is at 66.95%. So even though only like 5% of households have been provided with tap, water is coming out of 66.5% of the tap, which is a source of concern. Delivery of electricity grid and non-grid is progressing, so the pace could be faster. Among challenges we noticed, one is the neglect of maintenance and asset maintenance over the last decade. The second one is the fact that trust and confidence in local government has declined according to the surveys that have been conducted. Another key issue is that of the municipal debt. Municipalities are being owed lots of money, billions of rand, which makes it difficult for them to perform their functions. What needs to be done? Improve the effectiveness of provincial doctors, strengthen the regulatory oversight of water services authorities, fast-track the project-based approach to the delivery of basic services in the 7 priority districts, and national treasury and COPS to develop a policy response for the low payment levels and the accumulated debt owed to municipalities. Our concern deals with protecting our environmental assets,
again, we say that overall performance for Total campaign was at 66%, and some targets were exceeded. The issue of wetlands, which were rehabilitated in this quarter, was 87%, which exceeded the figure of 87%. We're seeing good progress in the processing of environmental impact assessments within the time frame, which are 93%. Challenges include water use license application to the extent that DPME had to intervene, and as a result of DPME intervention, a plan was developed to fast track this, and as a result, the data was corrected, starting to show that actual performance is 88%, not 90% previously reported. But there's another strategy that was developed to fast track the processing of water use license applications, which we can discuss during discussion time. The sector's ability to create jobs is still a challenge. What needs to be done? Implement all the interventions detailed in the ULA recovery plan, which we elaborate on. Facilitate the placement of graduate trainees from the Department of Public Works in Water Use Authorization. Outcome 11, only three more to go. Outcome 11 is about creating a better South Africa, a better Africa, a safer Africa in a better world. Areas of progress include the annual target of 3 billion grants, which for manufactured value added exports, which has surpassed, as we exported goods worth more than 4 billion grants. Our country has played a key role in the normalization of the situation in Lesotho, as well as in South Sudan. We have contributed to the African Renaissance Fund, though our contribution is still lower than the target that has been set. Key challenges include the low numbers of tourist arrivals, but this is also a calculation factor in that they precluded the tourists that are in transit to other countries. So this to be done is the implementation program ensuring consistency in the presentation of tourist arrivals in the country using the latest definition and methodology. The Department of Justice needs to assess the implications of the Declaration on Facilitation of Access to the African Courts on Human and People's Rights by citizens and NGOs. Outcome 12 is about strengthening the public service. No country can function without an effective public service. Achievements include finalization of the Performance Management and Development Policy of HOD. 68.4% of citizens who log trips in the hotline rated the response good. The target is advanced. A total of 66 procurement plans for national departments and entities have been placed on the publicly available e-tender portal. There could be more, but at least there's transparency that is increasing. Key challenges include the fact that departments took on average 117 days to resolve disciplinary cases. Target is 19. Non-payment of invoices within 30 days is still a key concern, with national departments having more than 8,600 invoices, valued at 43 million, departments 43,000 invoices, valued at 3 billion. Source of concern. Again, slide 47 reflects what needs to be done, stabilize administrative leadership at DG and HOD level. Outcome 13 is about social protection and the progress made. It reflects that 43% of targets have been achieved, exceeded, but 53% are in progress. South African children are receiving grants. Senior citizens of South Africa are continuing to receive all these grants. The ECG policy is being ramped up, and a total of almost 1,952,000 children benefited from ECG subsidies. A key challenge is that 657 people who receive bursaries from GST to study social work have been absorbed, while 1,995 remain unabsorbed. Hence, under the recommendations in bullet point number 3, we are saying under the current fiscal situation, GST needs to strike a balance between the training of social service practitioners and absorption to avoid producing large numbers of professionals who remain unemployed.
Yes, we need to ensure that the base on expanding child support grants, the only grants, are sustained. The outcome is our supporting, which builds social cohesion and nation building. Our position is that despite the resource constraints, the moral regeneration movement has, in partnership with government departments, continued many campaigns, distributed more than 7,100 copies of the Charter of Policy Values. The various civil society-led initiatives such as Know Your Constitution, which are being implemented, and there's also efforts to share common space among startups, which COPCA is enabling. But in terms of challenges, only 973 schools received sport kits against the target of double the number. From the target of 60 sport boys meeting their transformation target, only 33 achieved this and were eligible to receive all forms of support. Limited progress is made with the employment of Africans, particularly Black Africans and women in senior management positions. In terms of what needs to be done, the Department of Arts and Culture should lead the revision of the MTSF chapter, focusing on nation building and social cohesion, to ensure a sharper focus on key issues. That should build a broader understanding of how initiatives contribute to nation building and social cohesion broadly, and secure buy-in among departments for whom this is not a core mandate. And that is the MTSF to revise the core values of anti-racism, anti-sexism, and patriotism are inculcated using all forms of platforms. In conclusion, Chairperson, we wish to convey our observation that the DPMP has ensured a sustained focus on training the implementation of the MTSF, and through the MTSF, the NDP stage. Accountability is being enhanced through rigorous monitoring and reporting to the executive. Public accountability is enhanced through placement of progress reports on the DPMP website, as well as media briefings that I have from time to time. Evidence reflects the progress is being made across all 14 outcomes. This progress includes improvements in health data, access to education, access to social grants, housing opportunities, basic services, and reduction in access poverty levels. However, it will be remiss of us not to mention the high levels of unemployment, particularly youth employment, which remain a key issue of concern, as well as the persistent drought situation which the country finds itself. Another key area is that we have been reporting largely on implementation of the NDP by the government department in this presentation. But going forward, we also need to develop a capacity to report on the implementation of the NDP by non-state actors. The role players are not part of government, but are doing activities that contribute to the achievement of the NDP goals. How do we monitor them, and that when we come to this committee, we are capable of reporting on both what government is doing and what non-state actors are doing. Chairman, thank you for your patience.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, what are the members? There you have it. The first candidate is Honorable Chopes Fole, followed by Honorable Mandopa. Well, all right. Honorable Fink, Honorable Natasha Law, right, left, Honorable McLaughlin. Okay. Those names for now. Honorable Chopes Fole.
Thank you for the opportunity, Honorable Chairperson. I just want to thank the department for the information. Although it's thick, but they really tried to give us everything. What I will ask, Mr. Chairperson, is that I am asking them to give us the full report. Because we do not, as members, we do not just look at issues when we are interacting with yourselves. We need to go back and at our own time actually read the facts and compared it them with the report of the Auditor General and other research that, like the Budget Office report. So if we can get the full report, we would appreciate. I am happy that the last paragraph you indicated that you are worried about youth unemployment. But you see, that is contradicting the fact that people who have got qualified, their certificates are delayed. You know, that impacts on the future of a person. Because if you don't have a certificate, you can't look for a job. I actually would like you, the person, to put down that we actually call these people who are delaying other people's certificates. The usage of UIF money, it might be a good thing, but how accountable is the department going to be? And you see, when we deal with UIF, other people's money, and we should not have a situation where you actually hide your DG and come and give us information, because we will be looking very, very closely on the movement of that money, because it is other people's money. It impacts on the human rights of other people. The money that is owed to municipality, 10%, I would ask for you that they give us a list of those departments. We haven't seen this for the last many years, and the president has actually emphasized on his honor that there should be no department that is owing people for more than 30 days. And it seems people are not doing what they are supposed to do. So we would like to have a list of those entities that owe municipality. Because you see, at the end of the day, the public does not know that there are people hiding somewhere who are not paying municipality. They just see councillors who are not delivered. And how can the councillors deliver if the municipalities don't have funds? So this is very serious. This thing of poverty alleviation, you know, it's serious. It's very serious in our country. But I don't see how we are going to alleviate poverty when people are not paid within 30 days. We have talked about this thing. You know, small businesses are going down every day. This means it's not only those companies, but even employees of those companies are actually losing jobs. The retrenchment is done every day. So this thing of we're building jobs, we're making jobs available, does not work if other people are not paid and they actually go down. The last one, 10%. I think we must call this a intelligentsia, the principals of universities, to come and sit with us for a day in this committee and actually tell us what they are doing. Are they not worried about job creation in this country? Because you will see them on newspapers remarking on all sorts of things. But they are not worried about creating relevant skills that our economy requires. That is serious. We need to sit with them, not with other departments, but we must have them for a full day. They don't tell us what they're doing. They're getting subsidies from the state, but at the same time, they are not patriotic to this country. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Madopa, you're next.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Thanks for the presentation from the department. Chair, one is heading one to check here. The presentation is trying to align the budget and NDP priorities. And what one wants to gather is that we all appreciate, as also you said, you appreciate it. for the expenditure that is increasing now. So in a positive note, it will see that departments are trying their best to spend. But the question is, are they spending it in line with the priorities of the NDP and medium-term strategic framework? Is it in line when they spend, and also in line with their predetermined objectives? Because you can spend, but when you look at the predetermined objectives, it's parallel to what you are doing, so that we can say, really, this budget is aligned to the key priorities of government. And also you indicated, I'm trying to look at the page, to say that you are not reporting, I think, on this issue. Yes, you are not yet reporting on it. And also it does contribute to the priorities of the NDP and medium-term strategic framework. If now we are not getting a report, I know that we've got a plan to look at it and report on it. But are we not going to have a challenge where you find that you've got a backlog that you would follow up immediately to see that no, there is no improvement around the issue of implementation and so on? Why do we wait not to report on it and then look at it later, whereas it's supposed to be part of the priorities of the NDP as well as the medium-term strategic framework? The other question, Chair, is because I was still writing, you know, and now I can't... The other question, Honorable Chair, let me just move to page 15. When you were making a presentation, you indicated that findings of the assessment that you provide, you indicated that there are other challenges that you experience while the departments are doing this alignment, but others, when you go deeper, business as usual, you read it like that. What are the consequences for those businesses usually, staff that were supposed to align? Because we can't not align the budget and the priority of government. This is the challenge that you are facing. Are there any consequences for those people? It takes me to the other question around the issue of the performance contract of the department. I know that the department was trying to assist the departments all to sign the performance contract so that you can hold them accountable, because there is a performance contract. You know exactly that they're supposed to do this. How far with the performance contract? Have all departments signed the performance contract so that those that are still, you know, thinking that it's business as usual can be made to account on what they are doing. Because in the absence of performance contracts, you find it difficult. I'm saying there is a former shop steward. When there is inadequate, you know, performance contracts, you can't hold the person accountable. And it can't be correct that after 22 years, department don't have performance contracts. We want to check, because we know that you are in the center of trying to assist the department to really conclude the performance contract. The other challenge, Honorable Chair, that one, is that the challenge that you mentioned in slide number 22. You know, the issue of education is critical in the country, in any country, not only in our country. The issue of the kids, because the department, or the government, is still having the challenge of the capacity and skills. But now, I know that you have a plan to say, how can we deal with it? Like the issue of SATU, to prevent a principal to sign the performance agreement as it appears on your report. because it will be difficult really to hold the person accountable without a contract, as I indicated. But what I want to suggest or to ask is whether these recommendations of what needs to be done are going to be part of the targets of the department, so that they are in a position to affect all the department resolution what needs to be done. Is it going to be part of the targets to say that they fast track it? Because all of them is urgent. You see that in the National Arrest Anna, that has not been really, that has not been resolved, you know, between the employer and the employee representative. To say that if this thing is not the priority on the agenda of this department, it means to say that we'll continue having a problem. I want to check, if you lay it down, do you go back to the department and also discuss to say that these things that have been identified will become part of the target? And also to check with you, if they are not doing anything, who has got the teeth to bite? Is it you or somebody else? Because you can keep on saying, do this, they are saying, you sit with them and you see business as usual. Who has got the teeth to deal with the department? That is not really. Because we are of the view that as the department that is coordinating all the departments, maybe you have got bigger powers, but I know that they have got equal powers. But just coordinate and you don't have teeth, really, I don't think it's assisting us. That's what I want to say. Also the challenge that you raised in outcome number two, the issue of the progress on what the key health outcomes is not evenly distributed. I think also when we meet with the department, you are assisting us. It's something that we need to raise, especially because you said in the province, the issue of health is the issue of life. So if now we are not really focusing on what matters the most, I don't know where it must be focused. Because if the provinces are not really, you can see the national is above, but these provinces, I think they need to be assisted by the department, even if you meet with them. And also, I think, Honorable Chair, we will need to call this department so that we deal with them. Also, you raise the issue of the corruption, offenses relating to corruption on all on the Republic of South Africa still and are safe. But now, here we are not sure which department, because they are clustered, I think so. If I'm correct, it's a clustered department, it's clustered Department of Safety. To say which department, where this thing, it's a good thing, we appreciate that when there is corruption, it shows that the government is serious about uprooting corruption. If we find that those that have been made offenses of corruption, now we have also recouped the money from them, 5 million person, you know. If we can continue like that, I'm not sure, because now you indicated on this particular cluster. Is this the only cluster that you have picked up that there was a corruption? If no, why others are not reflected? Because as public representatives doing our oversight, we are serious about the issue of uprooting corruption. But we appreciate that the government is moving on the right direction, but we appreciate to see more other departments, you know, reflected on your report. Because I don't think it's only one department where, or one cluster where there is a corruption. Because I know also we said in the other committees, the people that have been fired and also money recouped, we are saying that it must be reflected as a sign that government is not tolerating corruption. The other question that I want to pose, there's got a lot of questions, but it's around the issue of IDC, independent, yeah. You have just indicated that they have approved 469 million in support of rural businesses excluding mining and renewable energy projects. And we said it has approved 9.5 billion. But to me, because this is a third quarter report, I was expecting not only to say they have approved, what action has been done, have they implemented it? This is a third quarter. It's not about approving to me. It's about to say, because they approved so much to change the lives of the rural people, have they done so? Where have they done it? We want to do the oversight. We want to know the problems. We want to know the inequality, where this thing has happened. So that when we are in recess, we can go and check to say, is there a difference that has been made in our rural community? Because to us, what matters the most is what has been done with the budget that has been approved. When we come and report on the third quarter, not to say it was approved. It can be approved and lie in the bank or in the shelf and not implement and make a difference. What we are interested in is a difference that it has made in our communities. So we would appreciate you if we can just get back the exact what has been done with the money that has been approved. Also, a challenge, I think Honorable Shofesole has raised this thing, the backlog by CISA in issuing certificates to students. You know really, that's why I was asking why are we not getting the report on the CISA, because we have this backlog. How this backlog came to an existence? Who was supposed to issue this certificate? I think something that I agree that we need really to get the department and get the clarity, or those figures also, to come and explain to us, because these monies are public purse, are in the public purse. So we need to understand why there is that delay, what about the students looking for their job. You have indicated like 5 point something, people that are out of employment. But what we appreciate is to see that even this, during the typical time of the situation we are facing in South Africa, of the resurgence, but there is an increase in the employment. Even at what percentage that it has increased, but that increase. But we feel very strongly that maybe if this thing or these figures can be fast-tracked, it will assist the young people when they look at a job. They are competent. They have got all the requirements that will be needed by the employers when they are looking for the job. Also, you indicated the issue of the social development. Also, we appreciate the scholarship that they have provided our young people to train them and also to absorb those people that is indicated here, that is about 5,000, you know. But also we are concerned about those that are not yet placed. But what we need to understand also, we need to work hand in hand with the private sector. Because government alone cannot achieve the issue of unemployment alone. Actually, the government's responsibility is not for job creation. It's to create a conducive environment so that the private sector can also play their part. I think public-private partnership, because after the people have been trained, if we are working together, others can go to the private sector, because the government has trained them, paid the money to train them. You know, I think it's something that we have to work, the government has to work hard to have that relationship with the private sector. I was looking at the other report on the comrade. It's written comrade, but the comrade in other words, you know, it's a center for development studies. So they were indicating that in South Africa, there is no balance, there is no coherent public sector with the government, because each and everyone is doing its own thing, despite that the government has called for public-private partnership. And I think we must make that call and make that a plea and negotiate with the private sector, also to extend it around the issue of job creation, because the issue of social workers is not only needed by the government or public sector. Even the private sector, they need it. Government has put something on them, but others can also try and assist. Also, we appreciate that the NSFAS funding has increased, but we don't appreciate the increase of fees, the rise of fees in the universities, you know. That's what we don't appreciate. But we know that the rise is made by the issue of the students are not static. There are others coming. You know, government, I agree with you that you said it's a moving target, and government will never, ever just realize it. It will take time. But also it will correctly happen when there is a partnership with the private sector to educate our society, to educate our nation. You know, really the people that are patriotic for their country, they develop their country. Then I think it's something that will need to, also, and the debt, this stuff, the package and the debt conversion of 60 billion that has been completed. I remember that when we were calling the ESCOM in some other days, you know, there was that problem. But now that it has been completed, it shows that the target and the report that now we are being given are the report of damage sometimes. You know, although there is needed improvement in other departments because it can't be the same. But we were given a report on that, and we see that now it has been done. It's really appreciated that it's completed. There was the other, talk about blue. Yeah, the issue of the municipalities being old, really, it's something that we don't appreciate. But we must also know whether in this 115 billion, because we want to raise the challenge that the collection of debt is a problem in some municipalities because they don't have credit policy control. Because if you don't have the credit control policy, how are you going to make the communities to account on what they owe? Because there is no credit control policy. They need to workshop with the communities so that they understand the steps and the implications of failing to pay. We must also understand whether the department also are part of owing municipalities. It's something that it must be clear. We say, also, the departments are also owing, because everyone cannot be tolerated for the departments to own the municipalities. But I know that when we called SAGA, they did say that they are working on this control policy and assisting other municipalities. But this thing needs to be fast-tracked, because the service delivery with this high debt are not going to be realized. And for us, we are coming from deep rural areas, you know? You know, Umlala's, where my constituency is, Umlala's municipality, you can see the poverty, you know, in the face of the people. But if the municipalities, they don't have, they can't collect revenue, they can't collect debt, it's a problem. Then the lives of those poor people out there are not going to be changed for the better, which we as public representatives, we think this is so critical to be done. Now, also it goes to the issue of the EPWP. You know, the issue of the bailer of those institutions or departments that are responsible for EPWP to provide the data is the reason for this lower accounting on the data. Because, you see, if we are saying there was a target of 87,401, by the end of the financial year. In the third quarter, only 19,232 that have been reported. The others are not reporting. No data is provided. And it leads to us getting incomplete data and also incomplete accounting on the targets that are supposed to be given to us. I know that you talk to the issue of the lack of capacity for data capture, and you know, so what the department is supposed to do is to come close and close that gap of the data capture. I'm saying because on your, was this table of yours that you talk about blue? I think it is a result of blue. This accounting is a result of what you indicated as like that you sometimes reported blue to say that there is no information given. Other institution did not account. How do you give the money to the institution and you allow them not to account by not submitting the report to the department? It's something that needs to be followed up, Honorable Chair, to say, because the problem of the EPWP is that it's all the departments. Department of Public Works just close mentioned. They can be hands-on, but the department not hands-on. But I think those blue that you talk about that has disappeared in my document, it's something that needs to be followed up. You can't give people money and you get a blue report, which means that there is not that data provided. Because this one does not mean that they did not, you know, implement. But they don't want to give a report. They must account. Their head must run. It must run. And it must run. We can't accept that. We have got a debt in the country. There are monies that are not accounted for the people that are supposed to implement those things. It's something really that as a community we are not appreciating. Here on the 30-day payment invoices, really, it's same like not getting a certificate. Because it means today that your business, if you are a small business, you have started the business and you are not paid, you're going to disappear in the system. But only the department, when they're defending themselves, they are saying they didn't receive the invoice or relevant information. But I know that CIDP has made a presentation. I was looking at their reports. They are saying that now those people that are failing to pay the contractors are not going to be paid. Now they made another arrangement to see that those have not been paid and for the required information, they must channel it to them. It's something that is moving towards the right direction, but it's something that needs to be fixed. We can't really tolerate that. The president came up with this policy because of the outcry of the small contractors that came and say, we are not paid. That's why we come and disappear. That's why our grades are not upgraded. You remain on grade number one if you are a contractor, because you don't have resources, you don't have the necessary plans that are required because you're not paid. I think it's something that must come up and assist our people. We are talking about this high unemployment because some people that are supposed to implement are contributing to this unemployment because they don't want to do things as they are written on the books and their heads are not rolling. They are heavy, they are the heavy people. Why people are suffering, where I come from, where my position is, the Tumalani, they are suffering, you know. One of the contractors came to me and said, hey, honorable member, I'm leaving this field. I am a contractor, I'm not getting a job. When I got a job, I was blacklisted because I was not paid. It's not something that we need to tolerate, especially the government. It's something that we need to follow up and really deal with it. Because we are serious about changing the lives of the people of South Africa for the better. It's something that really is in our priority as committees, as members of parliament, as they are here. Maybe let me pause there because, you know, there are so many pages, but if time allows, I will come back because I'm serious. We need these people to implement. And their heads must grow. Why? Where the performance contract, performance contract, because it's what will hold them accountable. We don't want to hear that, as we heard, Honorable Chair, that the ministers are the ones that must speak that. We must bring them back and we must come up with the other mechanisms. Institutions that is being used by the government that can be given the task to hold these people accountable. To say contracts are signed when you fail to implement your head in role. You can't pay people. Are they being paid a performance bonus? How are they being paid? These are not performance contracts. These are the questions they're asking. Thank you.
Another question?
But I'm going to remind her one day when she's about to take my role, because we'll support that. Nevertheless, and Honorable Chair, the oversight word that is used quite frequently is quite an interesting word, and I'm not so sure to what extent we're serious about it. And I'm saying that because last week, we had a presentation by the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, and he gave a scathing report, and then we had there was a report by the Auditor General, and the same story we had, what is happening out there. And now we get a report again from the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, and the same story. We get information that states that there's only 30 of the departments out of the 43 that are aligned with the NDP. Now that's just about 75%. That cannot be acceptable. But it seems to me, and I hope I'm wrong here, that we have the departments that come here, or we have the monitoring institutions that come here, they tell us what's wrong out there, and then we say, okay, well, we're going to ask them to improve the next year, and the next year there's no improvement, but every year the same thing happens, and that's why we are in a situation, because heads don't roll. And I think we need to look at how, you see, the information comes from these institutions and these mechanisms that we have, but it's useless if we just sit, and as I said the last time, and we put it in our cupboard, and then we don't deal with it. So, even, perhaps some aspects must deal with it, but we need to report it, and make sure that it is taken further. I'm just appealing to yourself, well, to ourselves, Honorable Chairperson. Having said that, I just want to make a few comments with regards to the presentation, which again, and I might phrase it differently, but I'm not saying that it's yourself. I'm saying you've given us information which must be used. So I'll make sure that I don't say you. Okay, so just I'll remind myself. On slide number 23, and let me start before slide number 23. On this slide number 21, there's an interesting illustration graph there, which and let me start off here by, you know, just comment I'm going to make on this one, and the next one is going to be a little maybe controversial for some people, but I'll say that and then I'll continue. I'm saying here, now you have this green, which indicates the key to that, the target achieved, exceeded, or likely to be achieved. Now surely all three can't fit in the same category of green. Because if it's likely to be achieved, it might not be achieved. Or it's not, well, it's not to achieve. So, you know, I just, and I also heard you say on that graph that the blue is going to disappear. Now it concerns me because it can only disappear if you get the all the data that is required. So by saying it's going to disappear because somebody doesn't want it to be shown, it's concerning. So, you know, I just would like another approach there. I mean, it's saying like, if, and I'm sorry to use this comparison, if somebody's committing fraud and you indicate that there's high levels of fraud, you say, no, I don't want to see that. Next time you show the report, don't show any fraud. Sorry for using that. It might not be exactly the same, but my point is that if there's no data, then it's not data and that must be answered. So, if there's no glue, I'm going to keep this report, and if we get a report the next time and I see no glue, then I think I'm going to request that you follow that up as to why there's no glue. Has the data being received, or is it just because nobody wants the data? Slide number 23, and this is the other one that I might get my ears bitten off by my colleague on my right here, but I'll say it anyway. It's no secret that some trade unions caused major problems in this country. Lots of damage to property as well. So perhaps we need to look at some sort of mechanism where, and I recall somewhere somebody tried to put a bill through and it was obviously rejected by Parliament, where if damage is being done and it can be directed to a particular trade union, then they should be liable for the cost of it. I mean, if you get the costs of, you know, for trees must fall, I think it's goes in the region of about 140-something million. Now, we're asking for money, but we're damaging property on the other end. So what I'm saying is that with regards to the report on page 25, which is the statute, and maybe one needs to look at statute and make it liable for damage that is being caused. I mean, if you look at the report here, they talk about, for example, the resolve the impact between the Department of Basic Education and the teacher union. I know it's not only such, but nevertheless, we just need to look at the cause of the problem, and then we need to attend. As long as we denial, we're not going to progress. So that will just be my comment on that one. The teacher absenteeism. So how difficult can that be? You've got a register, you go through the register, and you count any days particular teachers absent. So why difficult about it to develop systems to track teacher absenteeism, it can be problematic. And maybe that's why the teachers are taking off anyway, because they know that their absenteeism is not being taken. So that's just a comment there. Then, on slide number 26, Honourable Chair, now, this is an interesting one. And again, I understand that the report has been produced by yourselves. You've done the analysis. And they talk about 5 persons convicted for corruption. Wow, that's quite a lot, eh? Now, I cannot believe really that 5 people have committed corruption. We talk about corruption on a daily basis. My colleague, Honorable Maropa, spent quite a bit of time on that. I mean, if that is the case, only 5 people, then surely it must be ridiculously low. Just a total of 29 persons have been convicted. Okay, 5 for the third quarter, that's right, yeah. Okay. 29, but I see the target is around 20. Now, maybe one needs to look at the target, because if you only can catch 20, no, if only 20 people are trying to be caught, then yeah, it makes you wonder how low our targets are, and maybe that's why we're not achieving what we want into the desired result. On slide number 27, the last bullet point talks about the data that will only be provided to cabinet and will not be made public. Wow, that's an interesting statement. Why does cabinet only have to know about it? I mean, surely it's information that needs to be given to the public. So I just have a concern with regards to that statement. On slide number 29, and yes, just a commenter, so you might not be able to respond. I'm not expecting you through your honourable chair, but the fiscal policy stance that we are taking, maybe one needs to look at it and, you know, the wider economy here, because we talk about the policy that needs to promote low inflation, low interest rates, and competitive real exchange rates, which narrows the budget deficit, so it's not happening, and perhaps we need to look at some sort of a structural reform of the economy or something to that effect, but we need some sort of advice with regards to that, because I mean, if it's not happening, I don't, you know, you've said here that needs to be done, but as I said, the wise men need to indicate how is it going to be done, what needs to be done. It's easy to say it needs to be done, but, you know, just that's something that needs to be looked at. The last issue which has caused major concerns here, and I saw, I think it was on the same slide where they talk about support, more sustainable, and something about support for self-relief. I'm hoping already a second bullet point. Implement supportive interventions to address constraints in the agricultural sector due to severe drought conditions which will continue to impact on growth numbers. Perhaps we need to do it before the drought is over. It doesn't help implementing this intervention when the drought is over, because currently we haven't seen it yet, because it doesn't happen overnight, but it's been, you know, it's been reported that there's going to be major increases in the price of foodstuff, and now people are out of the program on the chair on dealing with an attorney is struggling to meet ends. An attorney, a professional person, is struggling. What happened with the poor people? So one really needs to be creative in so far as that, and I'm saying that we need to look at what needs to be done. You know, more detail of that we need to get from the wise men. On slide number 31, this, again, I want to just emphasize and add to what my colleagues, both Honorable Shoka Chitole and Honorable Matoka, mentioned about the certificate. The job has been done, the training has been done, the students, the learners have already achieved. That's it. So all they need is a piece of paper which they cannot get for it. There must be a way of sorting this problem out. This has been ongoing for a number of years. I don't have the detail, but I mean, I know it's not since yesterday. And all you need is somebody that that is completed, that can print the certificate. That's all it is. So why we have this continuous and it's increasing on a daily basis, just lack of certificates, it's all over the show. So it's a serious challenge, I understand, but it's not something that cannot be managed and be solved. This UIF surplus that is being mentioned that it could be used for job creation, I don't think so. I'm not so sure if it's legal anyway. I don't think we would support something like that as well. You've got money that has been, a fund that has been accumulated from employed individuals, and to use that money for something else, it just can't be right. So I think there must be other creative means, and as I said, I don't think we'll support something like that, where you use money intended for one purpose for something else. We've got other mechanisms, and I think we really need a lot of focus on that. This also, as a matter of information, that 100 billion that is indicated in a surplus, is that money that's still in the bank or is it just shown on the financial record, is it shown on the financial record but it's not there? You know, it's an interesting question because maybe that's why they only use for job creation, so that it could be, okay, well, it's been used for job creation, it's gone. But nevertheless, I guess if you could comment on that. Slide number 36, Honorable Chairperson. There is information that gives us about 267 land claims. Out of how many, can I ask? And then the land where claims were finalized, I see there's a figure of 173, but what is the total amount of number of applications? And then further to that, can you tell me, because I don't know, what is the difference between settled and finalized? Can you just ask that? And then I will nearly be done. On slide number 30, sorry, the same slide. Maybe just to reinforce what you've given us, it's unacceptable, obviously. And we really need to look at ways of sorting and fixing it. The bucket system with only 125 out of 8,250 can't be. It is, but we hear good stories last. I can recall that some of the ministers report what progress has been made. If that's progress, then I'm sorry, I don't want to be part of that progress. 83 informal traders, again, that information there, out of your target of 150, really low. That's really low. So, and it's obviously unacceptable. Slide number 40, Honorable Chairperson, those challenges you've brought to us, and it's more than challenges. I think, you know, when you look at the grant access to sanitation, 131 households out of 3,140. I think somebody should be fined for that. Not even reminded that you're not meeting your target and given a smaller discount, a bonus than you actually should. I think somebody should be fired for that, and I think that's probably something that we need to push, because you cannot, sanitation in 2016, it just can't be right. The second bullet point also, we talk about the neglect of maintenance and asset management And again, you know, it costs, we all know that, it, you know, we see that assets are, new assets are developed, new assets are built, but very little maintenance is done. And again, that's been, what happens is that it's disadvantageous because, as I said, that it costs more to build a new asset than to maintain an existing asset. The trust and confidence in local government, my colleague and I will support me in that one. That's all I would say about that. And Honourable Matlopa spoke about the belief that the amount owing to municipalities, so I'm not going to talk about that. Honourable Chair, I'm just about done. Two more slides. Suggestion that the department, the fourth bullet point on slide number 47, the ombudsman office should be established to deal with the 30-day payment of invoices. Okay, we hear that now, and I don't know, that might take another, I don't know how long, but we also heard last week from the Office of the Procurement Officer that they are also willing to deal with invoices that are outstanding for longer than 30 days. So this, when I got to Parliament 2 years ago, that was the issue that was being, it was raised, and it's still being raised after 2 years, and it can't be too difficult to sort that problem out. But it's good to see that there are suggestions and effective suggestions, but I just hope that this office should actually be established sooner rather than later, because we know what's happening out there. And it's not good news for people that, through a fault of their own, have been left penniless. And then on page number 50, slide number 50, this is the, this is also one of the issues that progress is too slow. You've given that information up again. Limited progress to the employment of Africans, particularly Black Africans now, and women in senior management. So that, you know, it's something. You've got the policy. You've got the women out there and the Black Africans that are unemployed. If you look at unemployment rate, you know, it just needs to be implemented. There's positions, there's work for them. So while that is not happening, again, you know, I think it's about time that people, and I want to use the words of Honourable Matlopa, people get the whole question, because you can't just say, well, listen, you're taking too long, so I want you to perform your function, can you please? So it's just not acceptable. Then, Honourable Chair, the last one. Okay, no. Sorry, okay, and then the last one, okay. Again, it's a progress, and then again, it's a progress across all voting outcomes. There is progress, but again, progress could be small, but we need, I think, substantial progress, because it's causing major problems. So those are my comments as far as the presentation is concerned. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Honorable McLaughlin.
Honourable Chairperson, thank you. My colleagues have been so verbose this morning that I have to be very creative trying to find something else to say. A lot has been said already, so I'll try not to be repetitive, because I don't want to bore our colleagues over there or my colleagues over this side. I'll try and just stick to what's on the slides themselves, and then I'll make some general comments. Slide number 3, I note we talk about 432 rand per month being the poverty line, but that's 2009. It's now 2016. Surely we've got more recent prices than 7 years ago. Surely we have an annual sort of assessment of this kind of thing. Can't get that a little more in line. Please, slide number 12. I just wanted to explain what Mincom stands for. I see it appears in several places here. I didn't see any explanation for it. If we could just have an explanation of that, please. Slide 14. colleague mentioned the fact here that out of 43 national departments, only 13 departments had some alignment to the MTSF. And you guys say that of the 30 departments, 11 departments demonstrated full alignment of their draft plans, while 19 demonstrated partial alignment to the MTSF. Well, my first question is, what about the other 13? What point are they at? Have they got no alignment whatsoever? And if so, what's being done about that? Once again, we come back to this accountability and consequences. That's where the head should start rolling. In fact, if it was me, they'd be drawn and quartered rather than just the head rolling, but let's not go too far into that point. The next slide is slide number 18. Your key tasks at the bottom there. You say the key tasks are enhancing planning, budgeting and monitoring and evaluation capacity, as well as accountability. One note is you don't mention executing. Because you can have all the plans in the world, but if you don't execute them, they're worth absolutely nothing. So if your sole function is just to check for the plans in place, everything else, you're not checking on the actual execution of the plans, then to a large extent you're wasting your time. And I really want to encourage you to try and find some way that part of your function is to monitor the execution of the plans. Are we actually doing the job? Because I know throughout this government we're great at planning and sitting in committees and talking, but we're not so good at actually doing it. We're great at talking about doing it, but we don't actually get down and do it, and that's what we should be monitoring, because that's where the pile meets the road, so to speak. Slide number 22. So I just want to stop on 21 on my way back. That's the famous table with the multicolours on it. On the left side, it indicates 0 to 100%, but that doesn't seem to have any bearing to what's shown on the actual table. So I would just ask, does it have any bearing? Because, you know, the 100%, this little first column, for example, at 100% is a little blue filler. Does that mean there's 100% no data? It can't be the case. So it appears up there next to the 100%. So I just wanted to get some clarity as to why we have this 0 to 100% up the side of the table. Slide 22. The bottom of the first column on the side, you say, good progress made towards completing schools, those to replace inappropriate schools. At the bottom of the column next to that, you say, additional 37 schools still need to be completed to meet the 15-16 target. Well, that doesn't give us a percentage. I mean, the target might be 38 for all I know, and we still need to complete 37, and we've only built one. Can we perhaps have this, when you mention a number, give us the percentage as well, and vice versa, so that we can actually monitor this. It's very easy to hide things behind a number when you don't have anything to compare with. Because I don't know quite what that actually means in real terms. Are we doing well or not doing well? Is that what progress has made? But I don't know what that means either. What is good progress? It doesn't say they're 95% complete, although this new creature we've discovered last year, the virtual completion, are they at virtual completion? Are they past that? Are they actually done? How many have actually been finished? How many of them are signed off on? And 37 that still need to be completed, at what stage are they? Are they just a ground level still? Are somebody, are the plans available? Has the foundation been dug? We're not really told much about this. Slide 26, my colleague also mentioned this one. Very important for you, this slide 24. We say the new TB treatment success rate is 83%, which is consistent with our target of 83%. Then the next slide you say the TB death rate of 4.8%, which exceeded the 2015-16 target of 7%. But now, the difference between 83 and 4.8 is obviously about 13%. What happened to those people? If they neither died and the treatment wasn't successful, what happened to them? It doesn't sort of add up to me. I don't fully understand why we're leaving out these 13%. Maybe you can just verify that for me. Slide 26. I have a similar sort of problem here. When we set targets for the police, aren't we in effect saying to them, it doesn't matter if there are 1,000 murders a month. Your target is to convict 100 people. So once they get to 100, they stop because they've now reached their target. The other 900 doesn't matter because I've now reached my target. Shouldn't our target be to convict every person who's convicted of a crime? That must surely be the ultimate target. Not so well for 58%, as mentioned over here, 58.95% is the target for contact crimes. Where does that failure come from? Why are we limiting them in this way? Shouldn't we be saying them 100% is your target? Is that what your aim should be? Otherwise, we're ever going to be complaining about a high crime rate in this country. Because we don't get the police authority done. So the other 40%, if I'm a prospective criminal, I know well, I've got a 40% chance of not even being prosecuted or investigated because I might fall outside of their target range. There's something wrong with our measuring stick here as far as I'm concerned. And I really think we should look into that because it's, to me, it's not an acceptable way of measuring that particular measurement. Slide 32. Again, this is a thing about the numbers and the percentage. Progress Road Rehabilitation includes 309,651 kilometers of pothole patching completed. Now, I fail to understand what that means, because most potholes are sort of maximum about a meter and a half in diameter. So how do you get to 390,651 kilometers? Is that putting each pothole end to end and measuring them all in a long line? I don't quite understand how we get this. And how does that relate to the total number of potholes? What percentage of potholes have we patched? As I say, it's a sort of meaningless figure to put here because it sounds like a huge number, but it might not mean very much, or it might mean a whole lot. But the way it's quoted here doesn't just need to understand what you're actually telling us. Slide number 36 first. Slide 36. Again, areas of progress. Right? Out of 41 core indicators, 81% of the core targets have either been achieved or likely to be achieved. My colleague indicated what's the difference between indicators and target, and 81% of 41 is 33.21. How do you get 33.21 that have been achieved? How do we achieve 0.21% of the target? I don't understand that. Or we'll come on to 0.21 of the target. Then we say again, 267 land claims settled, 173 land claims were finalized. My colleague also asked the question, what is the difference? Is the 173 included in the 267, or are these separate things, actually a separate meaning altogether? And then the next, what point, two down, I think, you say that an additional 190 farms were recapitalized. Please explain that to us. What do you mean by recapitalized? How do you recapitalize a farm? Is there some funding that's going into this? And if so, on what basis? Is it by way of bond? Or how has that worked? And then the next household, this scary word or force comes up, food parcels. 249,150 households gained access to food through various programs. Food parcels, are these the same ones they actually give out at section time? Are they included in that? I'd just like to know because it's recorded here as being part of the performance. And if it is, then I think it's sort of pushing the bullet a bit. My next slide is number 38. One of my favorite bugbears is conveyancer. 8% of new titles and 12% of the 900,000 backlog title deeds. This is criminal. In my opinion, this is one of the places where heads should go. Now, title deeds are so important to people. With a title deed, you can approach a bank, you can get a loan, you can start a business, you can do all sorts of things with the title deed that says you own property, because property gives you security. And if there are 900,000 people who are actually owning properties but don't have a title deed, they denied that access to finance, to banking facilities, etc. This is a big hole in our economy because people are being disempowered by this. And it's not such a hard thing to do. It's an administrative function. Conveyancing is an easy thing to do. It's a matter of documentation for the deeds office, get it signed, sealed, and stamped off, and the job is done. What is the holdup? It's been going on for 20 years, and I still don't understand why we're sitting at this stage. Why can't we get title deeds to people? On a regular basis, I see there's announcements, oh, people are going to be given title deeds in certain areas, and a big splash is made of it, and 100 people get title deeds, another 1,000 are still waiting for their standard look. I don't understand the problem. just a bit below that, you say, coupled with poor performance of the financing subsidy program that triggers bank loans, 3.5% of total NTS target. It's the same sort of thing. We're denying people an access that they rightfully have, and they should have. It's not going to cost us anything in particular. And so we're going to have to pay the conveyancing fees to get these subsidies done. But that was taken into account at the beginning of the process. And it's a negotiated, agreed fee. I just don't understand why we can't do these simple things that have to empower so many people. Slide 40. My colleague mentioned the 131 households. I don't know whether that's just within this quarter. And because it's a quarterly target, I imagine that's 131 out of the quarterly target of 3,140, as my colleague said. Sorry, I'm repeating it, but I think it deserves repeating because it's such an indictment. I had no notes there, but I'm not sure what it meant now. Sorry. My next slide is slide 44. Here again I have a problem at the bottom of the key challenges. Here we're talking about the tourism spend. And we say it's unlikely this annual target will be attained. But we're blaming here decline resulted from a change in the quantification methods. We don't mention the fact that the Department of Tourism introduced some really strange qualifications that stopped a lot of people from coming to the country and really gave our tourism industry a stab in the heart, as it were. And I think we need to look at that, because surely that must come in as part of the performance factors of that department. The department says that to pass regulations, the triple industry, they don't even say it was a thing that shouldn't happen. Surely that needs to be looked at. We're putting people out of work because someone makes the decision, oh no, we're going to stop child kidnapping and all the rest of it. Well, I wonder how many children have been prevented from being kidnapped in relation to the number of jobs we've lost as a result of what we've done to this industry as a result. I mean, it is definitely not going to happen to annual targets of the time unless we change things. I know there have been some changes and I'm very thankful for that, but I think it needs to reflect on that department's performance, as I say. Slide 46, one of my favorite subjects as well. My colleagues have touched on this thing about the 30-day non-payment of the invoices. I just want to relate this as well to COPTA. When we say that so many municipalities are owed money, we don't say in our slide who owes the money to the municipalities. I'm not sure whether that money is owed by the residents in terms of unpaid rates and taxes, or whether it's owed to the municipalities by government departments, which could also be the case because in many instances that is what happens. And it's just government departments that aren't paying the debts to local municipalities. In many instances they rent land or buildings from municipalities, they don't pay the rent, they use the services, they don't pay for the services. Once again, it's causing a major problem because in many instances, the municipality can't pay people on 30 days because they don't have the money. And they don't have the money because they're not collecting the debts that are owed to them. It's a requirement of the PFMA that municipalities must collect the money that's owed to them. But why are they not doing it? When it comes to members of the public, we have a legal system that provides for debt collection. We have all sorts of measures in place, but they're not utilized. And I want to know, what is the problem? Why aren't municipalities empowered to collect the money that's due to them? Because that's always the argument used when I ask, why do we only give municipalities 9% of our total budget? They can't possibly work with 9%. That's why they're in trouble. And the answer is always, well, because they've got their own source of funds from, say, water and electricity, charging rates and taxes, etc. But if they're not able to collect that money, then they're stuck. And because the 9% that they get by way of grants, etc., equitable share, it's just not going to cut it. And yet we push more and more burden down on the local municipalities to perform, because that's where all the difficulties arise. That's where service delivery is seen. And that's where it has to happen. That's why we have all the protests, because there's no service delivery. And it's always very good at the municipalities. And very often it's not the municipalities who are told. They're just the face of government, to the people who live there, so they're the ones who've got to take a flak all the time. It's a cumulative thing. I think it needs an intergovernmental relationship going on, but with a real thrust, yeah, I feel we have to try and fix this problem. Municipalities have to be funded so that they can perform. Without it, we're on nine into nothing. Slide 48. Just a comment I had, I think we've got quite nice figures here on the eligible children and old age people gaining access to the grants. Something that's come up to my attention lately is that many of these people, when they go and collect their grants, they find that their grants are only about 40% of what they're expecting. And when they query this, they're told, oh no, it's because we have to take off for the airtime you bought. And they say, I don't have a cell phone. Oh, you must have a cell phone because we've deducted for the airtime. It's becoming a major problem. In my constituency, which is Sebokeng, many, many people have this problem. And it seems that a problem that you just cannot fix because you're up against a brick wall when you come from the Department of Social Services. And I think it needs some serious investigation because I suspect there's some high-level corruption going on there. That this money has been siphoned off somewhere else. And the poor elderly, those who need it the most are having to pay for it, and that's not right. We cannot punish people for being poor and being old or being young. Just in general, I thank the department for what they've done. I suspect to a large extent you're gilding the lily. You're not giving us all the information that you have, perhaps, because I don't see, very often I don't see why. You say, this is what's happened, these are the failings, but there's no why it's happened. There's no reasons given for why the departments are failing. And once again, to me, it gives me the sense that there's no consequence, there's no accountability. And as my colleagues said, we've had presentations recently from other departments who have exactly the same problem. They can tell us, they can report to us about all the problems they see, all the shortcomings and failings there are. Some of them can even tell us why it's the case. But none of them have the power to do anything about it. And it's something I suggested the other day, that the Auditor General, being a Section 9 institution, should be given serious teeth. That when he finds that there's a problem, there's corruption, or there's maladministration, or whatever it might be that he discovers in doing his audit, he should have the power to do something immediately. Not just to report it in a 2-year time, it's still going and still rolling along. And I think from your department as well, perhaps you should be pushing that kind of thing as well. That there must be some quick fix kind of accountability and consequence for non-compliance, particularly when it's malicious non-compliance. Thank you, Jeff.
Hello.
Thank you, Chair. I think my colleagues have raised a number of issues that I also wanted to raise, so I won't raise them again. I'll just also just quickly run through some of the issues that I think maybe in some way or form they may have missed on the list that I wanted to raise. Chair, you know, I said last week we need to relook how we are doing our committee work, because I feel we are getting reports and we are getting the problems within the department, but then it stops here. We are forever writing the issues, how things should be done, and then it stops. So I think in a true sense, it's not productive at all. Because you have the AG that came, they raised issues, they told us what is the problem. You have National Treasury that came, they also told us what is the problem. And then what? We said. So I really think we need to, in some way or form, we really need to relook how we are conducting our business. Because over the week, last week, we have heard several people have not signed their performance contract. And you cannot hold a person responsible for something that you didn't tell him how to do it and what he's supposed to do. How are you going to hold me accountable if I don't even know what I must do, what I must achieve? So that is the problem in all of these departments. So the basic thing is not done, and you expect people to perform, you expect people to meet targets, but people don't even know what targets must they meet, or are they trained to meet those targets. It's a basic thing. And if we're not going to work on those basics, these problems that we are seeing within this department is going to progress. other people will go out of parliament, other people will come in, they will still sit with the same problem. Still the same problem because of how we are conducting our work. Then, on these departments, they haven't done what they are supposed to do. Because now I'm dying. I heard the presentation and all of that. But now through the presentation, I was a bit lost. But now, your department is supposed to monitor. What have you done in terms of your monitoring aspect of what you were supposed to do in your work? Because you are supposed to monitor these departments that they are doing and performing according to what is expected of them. So I think somewhere, you know, things are not aligned, or this department was just created just for the sake of giving one minister a job or something. But somewhere, somehow, I think it's either they have to give the department more truth and say, if by this time you haven't reached this goal, then the remedial action, and you have to be held accountable. That's why in the first instance I asked, where is the teaching? Because now you have officials that have to go and, of course they are responsible for certain outcomes and so forth, but now they have to go and report back to the DG. No, in that meeting, that was the outcome. Whereby the DG could have said to us here in this meeting to say, this is the reason why, as department, we still don't have enough tools to fight and to sort out some of these issues that are progressing within this department. This department is in a state of scariness. And if you look in terms of service delivery on the ground of our people, and you are seeing how people are just not held accountable, they just don't care. Then you have, in our slides, there's the one slide that talked about manufacturing 18,000 jobs was created. And then you have 5.4 million people that don't have jobs, they're struggling to find work. But then we are celebrating 18,000 jobs. Somewhere is a problem. Somewhere there is a problem. And then on the other hand, you have mining that are retrenching 4,000 people. Then somewhere figures or something is not going to add up. Then we can't celebrate 18,000 jobs. Something needs to be done. And in this presentation, what I feel that is also lacking and not saying, our government needs to create more industries. It needs to create more industries. And when you have more industries, that will automatically help with job creation. We don't create industries in South Africa. Nothing. It's just at a decline. We don't do it. And there are so many, if you look at the Department of Science and Technology, the innovative things that they are doing, and those things just are there at the university, because our government failed to create industries, for example, for cell phone batteries. And you have at UWC money that are spent for innovation, but those things are not coming back into to create jobs within in South Africa. It's how we are wasting money as a government. Then, Chair, I will go over to the slides. I think everyone has spoken about the alignment of the departments that they are not aligned. I think I'm not going to raise that one again. Really, you know what? It all boils down to if you haven't let a person sign a performance contract. You can't hold me responsible for something that you didn't tell me how to do. It all boils down to that. So we need to really move on that. Your department really would have to move on that. And you need to take a stance and say to this department that if you're not going to meet A, you're not going to get B. Really, it needs to move, comrades. On last week we have seen on the 80s reports and several reports of yours also, talk about the political oversight. Can this performance contract be linked with that political oversight, that there is no political will to let these individuals sign the performance contract? And then the other one, before I forget it, your department and the work that you have reported, did that have any in any way contributed to service delivery and so forth? And I'm going to move to my slide, share to my slide. And also on the graph is also not but clear for me. So I think everyone has raised the graph. I think you guys will explain it, and maybe by that time I will be a bit more clear on the graph, because you are saying on your graph you are measuring from 2014 to 2019 targets. But then you have from 0 to 100%. What I would have maybe would have liked to see in the graph you measure it, because you are measuring something in your graph from 2014 to 2019. So the graph must talk to what your title on top is. So maybe on that regard, you guys are gonna be clear on that. And then again on the teachers, the exit teachers. I can't believe it can be so hard. To draft an Excel spreadsheet and you sign against your name, that you were there or you were not there. How hard can it be? That is what we are doing. We are signing an Excel, printed out Excel spreadsheet, and we sign our attendance in a meeting. That thing gets recorded. And then the committee secretary can tell you, you have attended this committee, that committee that you didn't you attend. How hard can it be for 40 teachers to sign at the morning when they're having their morning meetings? I seriously don't believe that can be so hard for teachers to sign whether to track the whether they're at school or not at school. Then also on a good progress made towards completion of schools. So there's a contradicting, that is really contradicting for me, because we have heard something else on the report that we have heard from the AGA National Treasury. So if you can maybe elaborate, what do you mean by good progress? And if I look, everyone is talking about their constituency. Mine is in Paddy, that side area. And if you look, that area keeps, you know, it's heartbreaking what you are seeing there in terms of the school infrastructure and so forth. So I think if you just want, can you please elaborate for me on the first one? And then also, yeah, the 5 million honorable figure talked about it, there is more than 5 million, 5 persons were convicted. I think we can't celebrate 5 people that were convicted. We have seen several individuals that, you know, there's illicit flows, cash flows and all of those things that are happening within our country, and then you for corruption only 5 people, and then through the AG's report on last week that we have heard, and the chief procurement officer's report, and your report is just saying 5 people were convicted. I think we are dragging our feet a bit there in those people are getting convicted that are defrauding the country of money or defrauding the public purse. I've spoken about the 18,000 jobs that were created. And then on we had a report, and you will always be referring back to the report that we received from National Treasury last week, because I think things are adding up. On the AG's report, on the National Treasury's report last week, they said energy shows slow spending on solar water geyser program due to shift towards a new delivery approach. And then you, on your outcome 4, you said 9.5 billion under renewable energy on the independent power producer procurement. If you can elaborate for me on that, based on the statement that I, can it be that is that a changing of approach, that's why there's a major slow spend on the other side? Can you just elaborate for me on that one? Yeah, and I think everyone has raised their concerns on the backlog of certificates, really. It's worrisome. We are having targets that you are saying want to achieve this particular target, but then you train individuals and you don't give them the certificates. How do you expect them to find work? If you train them and then they don't get the certificate of proof that they have done a particular course. We were sitting with that problem in Nelson Mandela Bay where social workers were trained and they didn't find their certificates. They are still waiting and they're still waiting for job placement. Then why do you train people and you don't place them where they are supposed to be placed if you have identified that so many people need to train in a particular skill and you don't absorb that skill? Because that is what is also happening, because you have a government that trains individuals, and then those individuals are being absorbed maybe in the private sector. Some are going and leaving the country, and then you are losing all of that valuable skills that you have trained, and you failed how to absorb it. And then on the municipal debt one as well, you can't let people pay something that they don't know. I'm not going to pay a bill that I don't know how much I'm owing. If people is not going to get a bill on how much they are owing, and you have a proper billing system, I'm not going to get paid. I'm not going to pay that. In the past, I remember at my mom's house, I live in Timbaletu, in George, at my mom's house, you used to have those municipal officials that come and do the meter. That is not happening anymore. So how can you let people be paying a bill that they don't know, even know how much they are owing and all of that? So we need to really align this billing and sort out this billing issue. And also the same as Honorable McLuhan, my interest is also going to be at how much is the private sector owing municipalities on this amount is outstanding on two municipalities, because it cannot only be government departments. Private sector has also a role to play in that fee. And then on the EPW, it's still a challenge. I think that one I need also still an explanation on it, because based on the report that we received last week in the AG's office, is that they reported that in some instances, deceased people are receiving salaries on this EPW program. So I think if that's part of your challenges that you have found, I think the report needs to give us more information and more details in that. And then officials that were found guilty, were there any officials found as guilty, were disciplinary actions taken, and what was the outcome of that? And in cases, maybe EPW, because in some instances you hear that individuals have shown a particular ANC membership card or a DA membership card to get EPW. So in some cases you find instances like that. Poor financial planning, it's no surprise. It's no surprise. I think on that we need also more information on which departments are that so that we can sort out this program. Because if you don't have teeth to bite, give us the information so that we can bite from this side. Then you have a one, what needs to be done. DPSA should strengthen the unit to support departments with resolution of disciplinary cases. If you can elaborate to me on that one and what is going to be done on disciplinary cases. Yeah, I'm really done, Chair. Yeah, and I think Chair, overall, I see here on the report. They spoke about, I think somewhere in the report they mentioned the e-tender system and the transparency issue. Things are now more transparent. But what we have heard last week about the e-tender system from the national, from the chief procurement office, it's scary as compared to that statement. I think it's best that you meet up with that office and find clarity, but there's not going to be transparency. If the decision is still, the prerogative is still left with the municipal manager to make the decision who gets the tender. There's no transparency. For me, I can know the perfect information there, but if the prerogative is still with the municipal manager or the person at that particular department to make the decision to get the tender, we're still going to have tender corruption. It's not going to be solved. So I think that one also needs to be looked at. And then also on your disciplinary cases, I think, you know, your targets, the way you are setting your targets as well. Well, you are having individuals now waiting for disciplinary actions, but they are still getting money from the state and in huge packages. Individuals earning something like per annum 500,000 and they're still waiting for disciplinary action. So a person defrauded the state of public money and then he's still getting a salary while he's waiting for his hearing. Where's the justice in that? I think we really need also to do something on that and move on that. And yeah, I think overall, Chair, also just to close, I think the department, I think it will definitely need more powers together with the agents of it. I think we really need to move in that. If we're really serious as a community of following the money and hold corrupt individuals accountable for money that they are defrauding the state and defrauding our poor people on the ground. It's heartbroken to see that people on a daily basis, they are fighting for proper service delivery. And then you have officials that are just defrauding the state of the money that is rightfully allocated to the individuals that must get it. Thank you, Chair.
Hello, good morning. And lastly, Honorable Sinokonya.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the presentation. Chairperson, mostly covered by my colleagues who have asked so many questions, but I will make some emphasis on some. One, I support the issue that we need to get the full report so that we can compare it with other reports. Well, the issue of the data having backlog, to me it's not clear. What is the problem of issuing these certificates? If maybe they can just unpack what is the real problem. If they know, if they have explained to them, this is the problem that we have. The issue of the municipalities being owed, if we can get a list of all those people who are owing the municipalities, so that we can see, is it the government, is it the private sector, is it the community itself, so that we know exactly what are we talking about. The issue of disciplinary cases that took more than 170 against 19 states. This is serious. This issue is very serious. It seems as if departments are not really on top of the situation, but they don't want to resolve these cases. Yeah, those are the issues that I can emphasize as of now. Thank you very much.
Honorable,
thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
and thank you very much for the presentation from the department. Like my colleagues, a lot of my issues have already been touched on, but I'll just briefly speak to a few. Just on the issue of job creation, I think what I would like to just say is that I think the government is facing enormous tasks there in view of the economy and in view of the fact that we, as government, were saying that we need to phase out some of the posts. In which case then I believe that other people need to come on board, and I suppose the government must help facilitate the process so that we put lots of money in the private sector, and I think those are people that should be coming on. But the other thing that is just of concern for me on slide 16, you know, when you look at this slide on reviewing the departmental plans and you look at what falls under it, there is this tendency by departments to behave as if the NDP is a new government altogether, because you one expects that issues of targets, of indicators, of policies, of all those strategic objectives have always been in existence. Why they are not able to address a particular area, I simply cannot understand, because all they need to do is they have to do it in terms of the current policy. But this is by way of their observation that I don't know why people cannot read it, because they've been doing it for years. And suddenly they don't know how to write those targets and all that. The other one is on slide 24. I just need some clarity there. On slide 24, in terms of the maternal mortality rate, I see it says in 2014, the deaths per 100,000 lives per day was 140.9, and then there's a list of provinces where you've got big figures there. But at the end of that paragraph or that particular point, you have the national average as 140.9. What does that mean? Because it's the same figure that is written for 2020. Could be a misprint or something like this. You can just stick to that. The issue of the 5 million, I also just wanted to, what I wanted to comment about was it's 5 cases each with more than 5 million, which is a huge amount of money, but lower down the 29 corruption cases. Just a sense of, do you have any idea of how much money is involved in all these cases, even if they are not resolved yet? I don't expect you to have the figures now, because you may not have, but maybe if you have a rough estimate of how much maybe you would be involved in there. The slides on the issuing of certificates by the CETA, I think that's just mischievous. Why don't the CETA issue the certificates? Because I would imagine that they have some form of contract with the department. So why are they not doing it? And if they don't do it, what do we do about them? And that goes for the issue of the total number of TVET students who received funding. There was an increase in 2013, but they decreased the number in spite of the increase in the NSFAS allocation. But also these are for 2013, 2014, what happened in 2015. The UIF, the issue of the UIF, I think it's commendable that they've got such a big surplus. But my question would be, are people who are beneficiaries of the UIF really getting what they deserve? Because I know for a fact, I don't know, I must confess that I haven't had anyone recently coming to me and complaining, but I know we've had lots of complaints from ordinary people saying that the UIF people at the Labor Department, they push them from pillar to post. Some of them end up getting annoyed and not going to get them. And so are the beneficiaries really getting why we have this huge amount of money? And then the slide 42 is not really anything in particular, but the last point under areas of good progress, if you look at that, I imagine that this should have been under the challenges, because it says potential negative impact on other sectors, and it's written under areas of good progress. So it's just a matter of, I think it's misplaced there. I don't know if you can see it there.
Yeah, that last point. And then, of course, the issue of tourism is just a comment also in terms of tourism, that there is a decline. I just recently read that this year, is it true that this year, from the beginning of this year, that it has boomed quite a lot, the area of tourism, which I think is value of. And then the issue of 657 social work beneficiaries. Who are they? Yeah, these social workers. Are these auxiliary social workers? Because I've been thinking that we are short of social workers. And who are these people that are not being paid after they've been trained? Are they training maybe not professional social workers and just training a whole lot of people that they cannot have? Because I can't imagine a social worker, that huge number of social workers not being absorbed. I think basically, yeah, maybe the issue of the 30-day payment, I think, I don't know what is wrong with people, because they've got the change of regulations, which are very clear, and people just don't. And they have actually caused a lot of small SMEs, they are little businesses, because they rely on being paid, and they need to fall up because of this. I know a few of them. And of course, the issue of the last one would be the issue of the municipal debt. My question would have been a bit different, because I just wanted to check how much of that, what percentage of this amount actually is owed by government departments, because they are very notorious for not paying paying municipal services. Thank you very much.
Just a few areas. Or focus that I'd like to also raise. The first is around the increase of NSFAS vessels, the decrease of access to that financial aid scheme. Which I think is a serious worry. Perhaps the issue is that it is increasing slower than the number of students that are entering the university. That could be one explanation. But I think the area that must be investigated is the increase of university fees, which has an effect on NSFAS. Because it's not quite clear why universities increase fee almost every year. What exactly are they doing? Because the issue of student accommodation seems to be an area that government is addressing. One would have thought they want to build more residences. I don't know whether they're doing that. The other area would be, for instance, for other capital expenditure like laboratory equipment, etc., and so on. But those things, You don't buy a computer today and 6 months down the line it's obsolete. It takes 24 months before it can show signs of getting tired, etc. So depending on how you... So what exactly are universities increasing fees for? Which becomes probably the reason why the financial aid scheme gets compromised by this increase of fees. If you could look at that. The second area that is related to education is the point you were making about TVET college students who are found to be incompetent in terms of their skills. What happens to the recapitalization program? Because recapitalization would mean building motivated colleges, but also resourcing them better so that learners have access to equipment that they can use as part of the practical experience. That's one area which we'd like you to look at and investigate. Did recapitalization result in, for instance, workshops in university colleges being properly resourced? Did recapitalization result in the teaching staff being the competent staff that is employed there? And how are the TVET colleges linking to industry so that they facilitate that students go and do an in-depth program as part of their practical? Because probably that too would talk to the subject of how the institutions share their recapitalization funds with that movement of students to the industries and back. So there is something missing there. Seems to us there is not optimal usage of the recapitalization fund that comes from government into the institution. So that's the the other area that I'd like you to have a look at. You have reported on progress being made on the 30% set aside, which is a good sign, and we want that to grow as fast as possible, because it speaks to the subject of inclusive growth, enabling black small businesses to enter into the economic space and doing business with government, and then entering into economic activity. But you have not spoken to the 60% of jobs in the infrastructure build program that was supposed to be set aside for the youth. Linked to that is the final explanation of the 60% job for the youth. Is it the youth simply being employed by the big companies as a laborer, or does it include the youth SMMEs being taken on as suppliers, and in the process, that being part of skill transfer, so that by the time a project finishes, the small black youth companies are gaining a grade or two so that they can eventually stand on their own. So we need that analysis. And please report back onto that, because that subject speaks also to the broader issue of creating different jobs and advancing inclusive growth. And on that, we would like you to have a look at the regulatory framework. How far are we, or how far is government, in either revising the regulatory framework in order to facilitate this inclusive economic growth, creation of different jobs, addressing issues of inequality, or drafting new regulations altogether to address that particular subject, if they are not there? Let me give an example. If a particular state-owned enterprise said, we have 30 items to be supplied by SMMEs, can that state-owned enterprise wake up tomorrow and say, we are releasing these items to SMM. Because the regulations allow us to do that as an SMM. So, look at that area. But also, part of that should look at what has been the subject of discussion over the past few years now between government and the private sector business, labor and civil society. The issue around constraints that limit growth of the economy. Sometimes popularly known as red tape. And as government, and government keeps on saying, we will address red tape, etc. and so on and so on. Where are we? Where are we in addressing the issue of red tape, the issue of regulation that stifles economic growth? Because it's not only the issue of the private sector and labor having this issue addressed. It's also the issue of the departments themselves being the players in the economic space. And I say this because government has been saying this, that it has got to play a key role in economic development and in economic growth. And when one member mentioned this, I saw a nod from honorable members. So nobody is going to rise from these political parties and say, yeah, but government must govern and business must do business. Government stay out of business. So, from this side, nobody's going to say that. I saw them nodding when one member said that. And I raised this specific issue now to point at issues that we said needs to be addressed as government and even as parliament, so that this issue of economic growth is addressed decisively, at least from the domestic point of view. Because there's not much we can do about the global constraint. So I think that those are issues that we think you've got to look at. The last one that I'd like you to have a look at is the issue of the independent power producers. Very important program, and we hear that there's a lot of investment in that area. But it would be interesting to have a breakdown of participants in that program. Who are they? And to what extent are they contributing to the inclusive growth question? Or is it the old hawks still occupying that space? That's the first area. The second part thereof is the where does ESCOM stand with the independent power producers? What's the relationship between ESCOM and them? Because advancing the independent power producer program should not result in the illicit privatization of ESCOM. We wake up one day, there is ESCOM, but ESCOM does not have anything. So power production becomes a completely private enterprise, which would end up making electricity even more expensive than it is today. And that, as this committee, we are saying, we're saying, much as we encourage and support the independent power producer program as part of government. Government and private sector participation. it should not end up, as I say, in an illicit privatization of Eskom. So if you could look at those areas. Now, finally, I think the members, what members are asking as well is, when you evaluate these departments, ask them to give you more information that tells them why, if there is a witness or a failure, why has there been a failure? Because part of that might be lack of capacity. Let me give you an example. We received information from Water and Sanitation that they have a lot of general staff. And as a result, they don't necessarily have space to employ the qualified technical people who do the real work, technical work that the department requires to deal with issues related to water, whether you are talking about what do you call this, servicing of water. Sorry? No. Water treatment, yes. Or you're talking about the real bulk water supply, the building of them, the planning, all those technical people would do that kind of work and ensure that the department is able to say, we have this technical work complete, we now are going onto the field and we are doing it. So I think a department might say, you might evaluate and say this department is not performing according to what they have planned to achieve. And they say, as you look at them and you say, they have not done as well as they wanted to. But they don't tell you why. I think members are asking that question. So that the next time around you are able to say, have you solved this core problem and put a finger onto that challenge? If people are sitting for a year or two on suspension and their cases are pending and are being paid full salary, why is it that the disciplinary process has been stalled that long? If there are difficulties, it's not within the mandate of the department to say, the law enforcement agencies, please come help us investigate this thing. We can't put the finger into kind of corruption. It's too difficult for us. So that we can, within weeks, we can close this case and discipline this member or allow you to take them to court. So these are some of the things that members would like to hear from yourselves. We are not asking you to utter on behalf of departments because we are going to meet these departments. We are saying, so far as your work is concerned, I mean, tell us how able you are to put a finger into the real problem and begin to say to the department, when we come to have a look at you in 6 months' time, we want to see this problem solved and targets achieved in this particular area. Because look, we must have departments that do things and then commit errors because they are doing.
Yeah.
And then fail because they are doing. But not fail to do. That's where we are getting. That's why you hear these members asking this question. This is point, we are going to limit you very badly. But as we said, the questions that can't be answered should be answered in writing. And members, can we allow them until 1:30 so that we have at least about 20 minutes to have to grab a meal before we go to the EPC? Okay, go ahead.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. Between the members of the committee and the chairperson, we've been asked a total of 107 questions. We have been counting. So perhaps we'll just respond to a few that needed or that need clarification, and those that are really pending, and then we'll do the rest of the 107 in writing. But chairperson, just what this honourable. So let us start by appreciating all the comments that have been made and thanking the members for all the questions. With respect to the role of the DPME and how it exercises whatever authority it has, we went through the negative. So in our slide, we have mentioned that during the period 8 to the 10th of March, the five committees met, and all 14 outcomes were discussed by cabinet committees in meeting chaired by Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa. The format was that each minister would present progress for each outcome, and then the Deputy President would say, depend on what is your assessment, and would present our assessment with clear recommendations. And there would be very rigorous deliberations, very strong chair review, and very strict directives to a particular ministry to go and implement and address particular concerns that they were raised. Beyond that, Chair, we also say we are, from time to time, as we do the briefing of the cabinet, say these issues were raised in the last 2 quarters, this department has not responded. These issues were raised for the entire 4 quarters. There has been no progress in this particular regard. But we cannot fire a DG, we cannot fire an HOD, we cannot fire a political leader. But the issues, we always put them on the radar screen, always at all times. And we also appreciate the offer from the committee to call in those departments to also come and account to the committee about progress with the areas that have highlighted here challenges, which we reported to the negative, and we are comfortable that this matter was addressed to the negative and according to the oversight committee hearing process, that the negative will not surprise. So we really appreciate it if we can assist in that manner. But also in the way that we work with the areas that the committee believes we should be strengthening, we're all open to that. I do not want to take a lot of time because I would like my two colleagues to speak, especially on the pending issues of the certificate, job creation, CCAP, and so forth. And maybe I'll come back at the end. Yeah, maybe all the issue processes and stuff, I'll come back at the end. But let me take the commission opportunity to deal with the content. I'll also address certain specific content issues around land recap, around maternal mortality, around how many HOTs of started performance contracts, how many these are done. So, share with your patience and ask my colleague to speak. I'll come back at the end.
Okay, I'll just look at the ones that have to deal with outcome 1 and outcome 5, basic education and skills. The first one is the issue of the certification. We've been noting it as a problem, and what we've been made aware is that, the directive has been that CETA, the State Information Technology Agency, not CETA, the education and training one, is the one that's been a problem in terms of these things, but how they have been developed. So you have the TVET college systems of information not yet talking to your CETA systems. And so that has required more re-engineering of how these systems were working. Not to forget that a lot of these were, initially they were reporting to provinces. It is now they have been taken over by higher education. So the directive has been that they are going to go and solve this problem, and they are required to provide dates by when this needs to be to have been eradicated. Because as members have correctly pointed out, it is unfair for those learners who've invested time and money
and then at the end they cannot get now their certificate. So working with the three departments, your CITA, the PME, and DHET, where they've been said that we need to find a solution to this issue. And then the issue of the ANA and the unions is going to remain a challenge, because whenever there's a challenge on other issues dealing with DVD, unions will use that for anything else, so they stall on everything. What we've been made to aware is that there is a negotiation on how we are going to approach ANA, because it is not only a statute problem, but it's all unions who are raising issues that are around the annual assessments. The position of DPME is that we need these annual assessments. However they decide to have them, we do need to have them, because these are the only indicator that we have on how the system is doing below metric. We cannot just always wait for metric to be the only way of knowing the health of the system. So we are supporting basically DBE in the negotiation. The difficult one is the one on principals having to write a signed performance agreement. And that one has remained a challenge. It has gone through many rounds of negotiations, and we've been, DBE has indicated that they are closer to, they are actually negotiating around this issue. So we are waiting for them to tell us how they are going to deal with this, because it has bigger issues on how some of the people who are in management are still part of the members who are of unions when they should not be. So these are difficult issues that DBE has actually been involved in trying to streamline them. But as a part of the NDP, we are clear there is a need for your HODs and your principals to sign performance agreements as a way of holding schools accountable. On the issue of the setting up a system for monitoring teacher absenteeism, the challenge that the DBE has been having is setting up a system. As a school, they do sign those, what they call registers. Yes, they sign them, but they are not aggregated immediately so that we can know by day or by week how many are actually in attending or being able to be in the presence. Our question is basically saying, if we are able to pay them, personnel needs to be able to, they must be taking something, otherwise we are paying them when they are not at school. So we've been insisting on this target, that DBE needs to develop a system on how they are going to monitor it. It should not be only, we don't need a complicated system, as honorable members have indicated. We don't need a simple, an expensive system. There must be a way, because you do have district officials, you have circuit officials. Let us utilize them. We also have SAs that can be able to monitor this kind of information. So we are fighting for this target, that it should remain, and it's a target that we keep on pushing hard for DBE to be able to deal with them. I think I'll stop there and then give to Rudy, because most of the issues were on.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My colleagues have got all the critical questions. Honorable Chair, I thought perhaps just to skip a quick, I think some members have spoken about, including yourself, have spoken about the state of the economy. Now, the state of the economy is in a difficult situation. And this is largely not just because of the kind of conditions that we see ourselves domestically, but it's largely because we are part of a global market. Right? Secondly, our economy is largely dependent on minerals, and because of the kind of declining commodity prices, this has impacted us significantly. China has been our main importer of commodity groups, particularly iron and steel. They've just recently been able to put huge amounts of glass and iron and steel on the market. India and other East Asian countries for both gold, for example, and other products, and of course platinum to most countries who are reducing motor vehicle for catalytic converters. Now there's been, of course, the kind of economic conditions that exist in South Africa are no different to other developing countries. Brazil, of course, is even in a worse state. They are recording a first economic decline in more than 25 years on the number. So it is very, very difficult, and your point is correct. Let's try and find ways that we can do domestically to be able to do that. So this, of course, has an impact on inflation, honorable thing. I mean, you mentioned, how do we keep the stability? How do we keep price inflation in check? it does become a problem, particularly if you're going to have to import fuel and where there's not a lot of investment in South African markets, for example. If our currency is weak and you have to import fuel, there's a double whammy. Now, the price of fuel in itself, even though petroleum is relatively low, we have to pay more rands to import that, you know. The same with the dollar conditions, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, that if we have to import more maize or other staple foods, these have an impact on inflation and prices. So generally what we see is a significant level of import inflation. And this is, unfortunately, the Reserve Bank is in a very difficult position because this is not inflation caused, for example, by high wages. This is not inflation caused by other prices that are locally set. This is inflation that is imported from outside, and of course this has a secondary effect on the rest of the economy. So it is a difficult balancing act, and I think in our view we try the best under these conditions. The Treasury has put into place quite a bit of measures around fiscal consolidation, how we deal with some of the cost measures. Why, for instance, the UIF is one of the examples that many members have raised Honorable Chair. Now, there is a bit of debate. I mean, the UIF is in excess of 100. This is a surplus, you know. So it's been in surplus for quite a bit of time. In actual fact, it collects close to about somewhere between 16 and 18 billion rand annually. So the UIF, strangely enough, Honorable Chair, it's kind of, you know, like a German insurance company, but those have been on the wrong side of insurance. Insurance don't like paying up, you know. And we tend to say that the UIF is one of those kind of institutions, so it has a fiduciary responsibility to pay out. It has, for instance, developed a surplus over a period of time that can sustain quite a lot of investment. Now, the money comes here as it is now, right now, it's not going into a bank account. A lot of it is directed to the PIC. So these are going into investments as part of the PIC investment. No? What we're suggesting is to look at modalities of what we do with it. Now, it's important that we not create an impression that we're ransacking the U.S. There is a particular function of the U.S. to pay for unemployed people. But the limits of the U.S., and this is why the amendments are being considered by Parliament, is to extend the U.S. benefits to 12 months. Currently, right now, it's about 6 months. You know, including the amount of money for U.S., for people that apply to U.S. But also, I mean, one of the other options was to give promote investment in the economy is to suggest a 3 month holiday. Now remember, UIF is 1% employer, 1% employee worker. You know, so that itself, although the amount is not significant, but it does provide a kind of stimulus. For example, people with a large employer, who, for example, if there is a holiday, given that there's a huge surplus that exists. You know, this is not likely to impact on UIF beneficiaries to be paid out. So the different conversations that we're currently discussing with the economic department, including with National Treasury, but I think it's important that we not misunderstand what's intended for. There's also discussion in the Department of Labor around ensuring that UIF money goes into the public employment programs that they're sitting with. So that's an important area that we need to look at. So I thought it's important that we just clarify that one. Honorable Chair, Logan indicates around the industrial policy. I think we do quite a bit as directing industrial policy. Let me give you two good examples. When President launched the operation of KISA, there were two specific areas, I'm not going to refer, there have been four buttons of industrial health, but two specifically that direct the state involvement in supporting industrial policy and in supporting industrial investment. It's the first one that we had, which was the oceans economy. And this was important to get port regulators, to get investments, as you can see, the recent launch in Port Elizabeth in relation to the new tug manufactured locally. So getting investment in the ocean space was quite important, and that the state directing, for example, private sector to get involved, other players into that particular space, so that we can enhance our oceans. But more recently, Honorable Chair, we completed a Pakistan in mining, so to double increase investment in mining. We don't see mining as a sunset sector. We see the development of mining and what we can do for the future so that mining can be viable for another 50 years or so is going to be quite true. We've done that. There's been also recently, Honorable Chair, one of the challenges is that we hold close to 88% of platinum reserves in the entire world. Southern Africa holds close to 93%, the rest was in Russia. Now, what we know is that the motor manufacturing countries, that's Japan, France, Germany, and Italy, are investing huge amounts of money to look at alternative platinum in catalytic converters. So catalytic converters and use of platinum is to limit the amount of emissions that cause the cost produce. Volkswagen, of course, wasn't honest about the emissions, and that's partly because of the amount of platinum that went into their catalytic converters. But there's a huge amount of money being put in to look at alternatives. They don't want to rely on South Africa to provide platinum to motor manufacturing. They're looking at alternatives, which means if they do find alternatives, which apparently is about 10 years away, we still have a huge problem of a mine iron body, where we can use that bit of, if we're able to find a market of that. What the African government has done with platinum miners is to develop a fuel cell technology. And honorable member, I don't know if you've noticed, but in actual fact, there was a recent launch to Kralen for us to be created around fuel cell technology. Fuel cell technology is literally a new form of technology that is using energy, to produce energy in a much more cleaner way. The byproduct of fuel cell technology is that you use, platinum, you put gas through it, and the only byproduct of that is water, and water can be used. You know, it's very, very clean water. Honorable Chair, I can use one example. There is one operating and a successful fuel cell that is working in the city of Johannesburg. If you drive past the Chamber of Mines, if you have some time in Johannesburg, you see a big block of metal. It looks the size of a Volkswagen, and it has 43 ounces of platinum, and it uses the Johannesburg LPG gas network where it runs, and it produces 100 kilowatts of electricity with a surplus being put into the system, in the Johannesburg system, during the course of the night. So we're looking at that, honorable member. We're actually spending a lot of time looking at new technologies using our existing strengths, like mining, for example, in developing industrial capacity elsewhere. The other comment that I want to just output is on this one, on the renewable energy program, honorable chair. Do you make comments on that? Currently now, we are one of the most successful renewable energy power producers. Of the four bidding windows going to five now, we've been able to procure close on to about 7,000 megawatts of renewable energy. That is valued at about 190 billion rand. So we've been able to, through our renewable energy program, attract more than 190 billion rand. So think of that investment at the IDC, the multiplier is quite significant. So a large part of that has come into our country developing new technologies. This is PV rooftop, for example, photovoltaic investment in the Northern Cape. If honorable members see this huge glass, things that attack the sun. There's of course winds on the coastline, particularly Port Elizabeth and of course near Cape Town. But there's a huge amount of investment in those areas, which I think has been very, very important. Honorable Chairperson.
Chairperson, I'm worried about time, so I'm trying to not that I'm taking you said you know power.
Yeah, I want to come to that. Okay. So we don't know. We will provide a question to the breakdown of the 90-odd plus bidders that are participating in the renewable. On the SIPs, honorable members, there is a report on SIPs. It's just that what we were asking for is significant alignment to the quarterly program of action report. So there are reports. What we're hoping is in the next quarter that this will be contained in that one. The IDC investment is of course, I think this is an important area. Okay, how much will be implemented, not approved? Yes, of course, I think we have, I don't have the answer right now. We'd have to provide your written comments as to what is approved is not necessarily what is spent. So we have to provide an exact number of that amount which has been approved, how much has it been spent. think the others are more than just one area on Honorable Chair, your comments around the performance privatization, you allow me just to make that one as the last one. Honorable Chair, remember our energy production is governed by what is referred to as the Integrated Resource Plan. So the Integrated Resource Plan sets an objective of what and where we procure. So it says we want to procure 9,000 megawatts from nuclear, we want to procure X amount from coal, we want to procure X amount of renewable, etc., etc. So that is what governs our energy production, even if one puts it in that energy generation capacity. And of course, part of the Integrated Resource Plan is ensuring that all energy producers work with one another. And so, for example, the RIP program and the Independent Power Producer program, which can be coal or other forms, works within that Integrated Resource Plan. I think that I'd want to, being part of the electricity war room when it was still existing, was one of the areas that I think we made very, very clear that, you know, the fund itself of privatizing DESCOM, what we have to do is ensure that we have the capabilities to be able to harness energy production and generation from other sources. And by way of example, I just want to express in my last point, Honorable Chair, is that when we introduced the renewable energy power producing program, it was very simple. It was in excess of 2.50 a kilowatt. Coal at that time was on average about 60 cents. Today we can say that a large portion of our renewable energy program is less than 60 cents a kilowatt. And that's partly because of the multiplier, the huge number that has been there, and the investments being put up. So in actual fact, renewable energy power producing bidders are producing the kind of energy that is on there, both solar and wind, at much cheaper rates than what we're producing energy doing coal.
Chair, as we conclude and hand back to the Chair, the Mincom BUD is the Minister's Committee on the Budget. It's the committee that makes the final recommendations to Cabinet about how the budget should be structured and how to look like for the following year. Land claims finalized, this is special, finalizing those where there's now an outcome, whether people will be compensated or sent to their land. Settled means either they've been taken back to their land or they've been compensated. On the issue of maternal mortality, yes, there are those five provinces which are pulling up our maternal mortality level. Yet there are four provinces which are doing well and are pulling it down. And the correct direction is that it should be down. We've highlighted those five because they are the outliers where they have the biggest heading of the problem that needs to be addressed. The farm capitalization program is led by the Department of Rural Development and Land Home. They are supporting farmers, and emerging farmers, either infrastructure, operational cost of the farm. The farmers have to produce a business case, they get government support, and they are monitored and supported about how they are progressing. So we've also been requested to provide a number of reports to the committee, which we will do. The ones that are produced by departments, we will also refer it to our minister just for clarification, because they come in the form of cabinet memos. So there are 14 outcomes for each of them who have cabinet memos. That's why we get this 40-page report, which we try to summarize today. And if we can go ahead, then there's no problem. But the reports, like Mr. Dix mentioned, on the ships, we'll be able to share the list of, and I contact with national and provincial government departments that own municipalities the largest amount of money. So we'll provide that list as well. We request the committee's assistance as well with the issue of non-payment of suppliers within 30 days. There's a special meeting that has been set up in the TPNE, and it's been fairly well. So far, it's recovered more than 89 million rand. Recovered means getting government funds to pay suppliers that are being owed. But what we are finding a challenge is that suppliers are afraid to come forward. They think they're going to be victimized. If I report that this department has not paid me within 30 days or has not paid me at all, I won't get business from this department again. So we just need the assistance in saying to people, you will not be victimized. Not the intention of government to do that, but the intention is that you need to be paid because you provided a service and you supplied a legitimate invoice. In the interest of time, Chair, can I stop there? And then the rest we'll deal with in the energy.
Thank you very much. I think that shutters will close
we would have, as a committee, an interest in having you back here again. We would like to see, for instance, that graph. When we meet after you have done your evaluation at the end of the 2015-16 financial year, and perhaps the end of the third quarter of the 16-17 financial year, so that we are able to see whether that green is growing up and the yellow is getting shorter, and of course eliminate the red and the blue. We have to
the blue coming in, the blue will become red. Well, that's why the men when they say the blue must go. So if you don't have data on your own performance, it's no longer blue, it's red.
So we would like as a kind of engagement, we'll let you know when, because we are interested in seeing the green growing, getting up. Very few are at the level of 50%, so that's a worry. But also we probably will bring in the other departments when we have a look at all of that, so that we can begin to speak with one voice and say, things have got to change. All right. I think we should end at that. And Honorable Shopperson, you wanted to make a comment?
I really want to agree with you what you're saying. But I want to emphasize that in the blue, you know, the absence of data means people have they are doing wrong intentionally. The absence of data. For the last 5 years, the Auditor General has been emphasizing that. And I know for a fact that they even ran workshops on a record keeping. And departments and municipalities attended. And I attended those workshops, by the way. So I don't see how people can claim that they have any ignorance. The only indication here is that they are criminals in the department who actually don't want anybody to know what they are doing. And I would suggest, Chairperson, that this department, that they have no data, we call them for this period. They must give us the data that they were supposed to have given us, because it is criminal.
Honourable members, and officials, on that note, we end this meeting. I'd like to thank all of the members, honourable members, and the officials, our support staff, included.